Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yo, kids. It's time. I don't know why I do that. Sorry, everybody. It's time for Tuesday Night Jaw with me, Jim Smallman, and my guests. I'm doing it really rapid introductions. Don't leave. Get back here. And my guests for this very special list edition, Matthew Richards. Hi.
Wow, that's really, really weird.
What?
You have never just said my name.
No, sometimes I want to. I mean, we'll get to all the bread-related shit in a bit, to be honest.
See, that's like just psychological warfare. I just feel like you're setting me up, because you know you've put me through hell.
3 hours in, mate, I'm going to just unleash a beast. I'm not. And Christopher Brooker.
Hello. Hello. Formal and yet efficient today. Yeah.
Have you had
complaints?
No, I've got a lot to get through. So I'm going to do some plugs. I'm going to let you kids plug some stuff, and then we're going to get on with the show. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, we're on the Distraction Pieces Network. Check out every podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network because they're all great and we love them dearly. That's point one. Point two, my website, jimsmallman.com. I've got a show to download on there for $5 and I've got all my gigs coming up and all that jazz and a blog and some videos and things like that. And then this is the most important plug today. Progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com. This is _progress on Twitter. We're recording this on Tuesday evening. This will be up by a very late Tuesday night, very early Wednesday morning. If you're listening to this on the way to work on Wednesday morning at noon on Wednesday, Progress making a bit of an announcement. And
more to the point as well, if you're listening to this on the way to work, we're all still in bed.
Yeah, I won't be. I've got a baby.
Matthew and I are still in bed.
Together, like Morecambe and Wise.
Absolutely, we've got little matching nighties and caps and everything.
Bert and Ernie.
Yeah.
Bert and Ernie's really easy to imagine that, wouldn't you?
But if we did the Morecambe and Wise breakfast sketch, Matt would have to wear a hazmat suit.
Yes, he would. So much grain. So yeah, noon on Wednesday. Check us out on social media. We're announcing something. And if you're coming to Super Strong Style 16, not this weekend, the weekend after, then we're doing a live podcast. Chris isn't around because he's busy. Matthew is around, so we'll be joining me and my business partner, Glenn Joseph, on the Sunday evening. You can buy tickets via progresswrestling.com. I think tickets are £6. Even if you're not coming to Super Strong Style 16 and you want to come to the Electric Ballroom and come to the live Tuesday Night Jaw, you can. It'll be me and Glenn and Matthew and probably some wrestlers. And a big old Q&A and all kinds of shenanigans. It's mainly just going to be swearing and people throwing bread at Matt. But don't stress about that yet. We'll give out bags of slightly stale bread on the door. But yeah, so come to that. So that's progresswrestling.com. Get tickets for the Sunday night of Super Strong Style 16, the live Tuesday Night Jaw podcast, but noon tomorrow. Bit of an announcement. I'm not going to say anything more about that. You guys plug some things. Matthew, plug a thing.
Okay, cool. Twitter handle is mrichardshost. This Friday, I will be at Fight Club Pro, and we've just announced, literally as we're recording this, that we have got a bigger warehouse / wrestle house, as Chris inexplicably rustles behind me while I'm doing my plugs. unprofessional. We've got a bigger room. We've already sold out, but I imagine probably more tickets going on. Check it out. Go on Twitter. Go and find Fight Club Pro. Come and get involved. It'll be awesome. I'm also doing commentary at Super Strong Style Weekend as well as doing the podcast. So I'm super excited about that because I get to fanboy over Flamita. Sick. And I will be doing Insomnia Island as well for multiplayer at the beginning of June. So I'm actually really excited about that because I love Ireland, I love Irish people, and I don't mind a drink, but I can't drink Guinness anymore.
Is it because it's got wheat in it?
Yes. Well, it's like barley.
Wow. Who's your favourite member of Bewitched?
I don't know their names, but it's the one with like the dark curly hair.
The Greek girl.
Yeah, and is she?
Whoa! She's Greek.
Yeah, she's Irish, but she's of Greek descent.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she's the one that says, "You fight like your dad."
All right. Okay. My wife used to be a childminder. I'm certain she used to look after one of the twins' kids.
I once gigged with one of the twins.
I know a pair of twins.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, when you say gig, you mean performed. You didn't blame.
To be fair, they were the crowd wasn't getting into what we were doing, and it turns out that fighting like her dad is a lot more hardcore than I realised.
Her dad at Sushi Anita.
Seriously, have you not seen at the end of every Bewitched concert, they just do this promo where they just cry and cry,
slap each other.
Yeah, they're supposed to be retiring, but keeps coming back. Niche jokes.
Good plugs, Matt. Good plugs. Efficient. I liked them. Good work.
Thanks, mate.
I'm happy to help. Christopher, do your plugs in as efficient a manner as Matthew Richards just did.
Well, I'll have to put on a cod German accent to be truly efficient, won't I?
Yes.
The Future Shock Wrestling is this Sunday. And we have the main event for all time. The two big men, they are the Tyson T-Bone and Rampage Brown. They will do the fight. Buy the tickets, not many left. Futureshockwrestling.co.uk.
Good.
We have peaked. Yeah.
We haven't because it's three of us. And what we're going to do today, guys, is we're going to list our 10 favourite matches of all time. Each of us. Mm-hmm. We're going to list them. We're going to argue about our lists. Some matches will cross over. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. Me and you more than him, because he's going to deliberately hipster dickheaders.
Oh, I mean,
list is going to be...
Or am I going to go completely the opposite?
Ooh. Number one, Hogan Andre.
Yeah, that's it. Damn
it. Matthew, I can't help noticing, these are the last 10 matches you watched, including all 7 from Progress on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, no, because of course there are rules, like normal. You can't use the same wrestler twice in your top 10. You cannot...
I probably should have paid attention to those rules, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you should have paid attention to these rules. You cannot choose the same wrestler twice in your top 10. You cannot choose 2 matches from the same show/card, however you want to describe it. Now Christopher is panicking.
No, actually, you know what? I may well have followed them without following them, if that makes sense. I think I managed to pull it off.
Because it's like, the reason I do these rules, it's like if you make a mixtape, right? You make a mixtape, you don't have more than one song by each artist on there.
Do you know the worst thing about that is? It's exactly the kind of mentality I had when I was putting this together.
Yeah.
And this is why me and you are mates. I don't want to be mates with you because I absolutely hate everything about you.
We hate each other's guts, but yeah, we're really good friends.
Yeah, it's horrible, isn't it?
We're very much a Hollywood cop buddy drama.
Also, I just want to say at this point, because I don't know if you guys went through this, like, if you're the kind of person that goes to wrestling shows and rates things out of stars and stuff, I want to say, first of all, I have a newfound respect for you. Also, why the fuck do you do that for fun? This is the most stressful and hideous thing I have ever done. I literally spent all of last night, like, getting upset about fucking matches, like, and then remembering stuff and then going, does that fit into what I want, you know, be telling? Is it, am I going for narrative? Am I going for spots? Am I going for...
Come here.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, I feel your pain. It's ridiculous. Because it's similar for me. Because I spent 10 minutes doing this earlier, and it was one of the hardest 10 minutes I've spent today. You have no idea the stress I went through.
I spent 3 hours doing this.
Yeah.
Just because I wanted it. And once I got the 10 matches, it was narrowing it down to 10. Because I reckon I've got 30 matches I really properly love. Mm. And at one point, I had my headphones on because my wife and the baby were in the room. And I said to my wife, I said, can you remember any matches that I've forced you to watch because I think they're great? And she listed a few and I went, oh, good reminders.
Excellent.
So I have got, and what we'll do is we'll all do a number 10.
Yep.
And we'll do a number 9. or yeah, and so on. Yeah, cool. Before we get to that, though, we do have to do a pun game.
Yes.
And I pre-warned you about the pun game you today. So we are going to do a pun game, which is wrestling video games.
Mm-hmm.
It popped into my head earlier on because I thought of a really niche one. And then I was really proud of it. And I thought, well, I'm just going to make the boys do this. The niche one I thought up was now, Sonic the Hedgehog Wild.
Oh, that's
good. Oh, my God. That's really good.
It's the worst WCW pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's why I appreciate it.
They did a terrible one for free in front of bikers.
Because Eric Bischoff loved it.
And then did another one.
Yeah.
Well, they did one on a beach as well. Bash at the Beach 95.
Mm.
And in the very first match, which was Renegade versus Paul Orndorff.
I'm in.
Orndorff reached down, grabbed a handful of sand and threw it in Renegade's face. And I swear, if you listen carefully, you can hear the rest of the locker room going, fuck's sake!
Well, funny you should say that, Chris, because that match is number 6 on my list. Yes. Yes. I've got a very nice, simple one, which I thought of when I was on the toilet.
We didn't want the origin story.
This has become like our tune.
I know, right? Marrow 64.
Nice.
Simple. I have a more convoluted and complicated one. Metal Gear Solid, Jake the Snake Eater.
Well, that's pretty good. See, I'd got a Metal Gear Solid one.
Go on.
But it's nowhere near as good as that. I'd got Heavy Metal Gear Solid.
I had that thought. The Mexican wrestler. Yeah.
So
on that. I've got another one. Yeah. Streets of Brian Cage. You knew I was going to be good at this.
You started well.
You knew I was going to be good.
I've just gone in a loop around Resident Evil.
Good. That's good.
Toe Jam and Earl Bobby Eaton.
Good.
Good.
Awesome Kong Country.
Nice. You're going to have to let me unleash a few in a row here.
Go on.
Mm-hmm. Pokemon Gold Dust, Pokemon Silver King, Pokemon Amazing Red, Pokemon Blue Meanie, Pokemon Yellow Dog, Pokemon Simon Diamond, Pokemon Ruby Riot, Pokemon Emerald Flosion, Pokemon Tyler Black, Pokemon Kerwin White. Good night, everybody.
Hang on a minute.
All right, fair enough.
Pokemon Ember Moon.
Oh, nice. Good work.
Thank you.
Good work, mate. That's completed the set. George the Animal Steel Crossing.
Oh, that's good. Well done, mate. Well done.
Grand Theft Otto Vance. Really niche one.
That's good. That's good. All I can just think of is
Watchdog Jesse James.
Nice. That's good.
Nice.
Stop sounding so patronising at the end. I was like, oh, well done you.
That's good. Call of Duty Alistair Black Ops.
Mm-hmm.
Doom.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. We're done.
Good night, everybody. Yeah. Adrian Street Fighter 2.
Oh, that's good. I was trying to think of a street one. That's good.
Dead Terror Rising.
Oh, that's really good. That's really good.
The Curse of Crazy Monkey Jun Kasai Island.
Fuck.
That is fucking tremendous, mate.
I don't even know where that name came from. I've never watched any of his matches, but clearly I've absorbed it somewhere.
He weirdly was in a... I think he was in a Super Jacob. At one point, he's a hardcore wrestler, but yeah.
Tama Tonga Gochi.
Oh, very good. That's not really a game, though, is it? That's more of a
this
handheld.
Is my favourite one. I
handheld
with.
Electronic device.
Yoshihashi's Woolly World. I'm so proud of that.
That's actually really, really good.
Wii Fit Finley.
Oh, good.
Good. Nice. Yeah.
Altered Beast Incarnate, which was one of the shitter ones I came up with.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Altered
Beast.
You.
I like Altered Beast for the sample at the beginning of it where a man just goes, welcome to your doom.
How about this one? Brock Band.
Nice. Oh, Guitar Chris Hero.
Oh, good.
This is great. I mean, this is...
Yeah. Gran Namiwa Turismo.
Fucking hell.
Niche as fuck.
I think what we need to do is go, it's niche to the power of niche, if you can get the nichest possible game.
Taka Touring Cars.
Oh, nice, nice.
Simple.
How about this one? Onimusha Samuels.
Oh, that's good.
Fucking hell.
That's really good. NBA Jimmy Jam.
Well, look,
you fuckers have got... if you want to tweet us, at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw, there's going to be nothing left.
No.
Nothing left. I think I've got a couple left. Mr. Perfect Dark.
Oh, that's good as well.
Tariq, Dinosaur Hunter.
Goldeneye. It's not as good. Yeah.
Crash Holly Bandicoot.
But yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. Tony, Road Warrior Hawks, pro skater.
Do you know what this, what's great about this is like every time you say one, I think of the video game cover with the new person
just
implemented
pads,
into it.
Doing a half pipe. The last one I got, and it's more aligned.
Jet Set Chilli Willy.
Oh, nice. Because Chilli
New
Willy
Zealand
was the man.
Story Wilson.
Nice.
Oh my goodness. That's good.
You're doing well.
Yeah.
I've got one now, but it's using the line from a song, someone's theme song, rather than just to make it better than just using it. Pro Evolution is a Mystery Soccer.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
That's my list. I've done my list. We'll pop up with them as they spontaneously come into our head throughout the show. Call it a show. Not a show, is it?
Oh, before the show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try a little bit of divining. Because last night I had a Chinese takeaway. So
Doing all right.
It's all right. I had heartburn for about 15 hours.
Yeah.
Now, I've got...
Sup, geez.
Hello.
You're not allowed to walk into a room and go, sup, geez.
This is like a terrible Wayans Brothers sitcom happening. We're all... Hello, Stacey.
Hi.
You're looking very well.
Thanks. Okay.
Love you.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Carry on.
Ta-ra.
Right, now, I've got two fortune cookies here, which will predict the direction of this podcast for you both.
All right.
Now, Jim, this one's for you.
Okay.
Now, Matt, this one's for you, but I'm not going to let you handle it.
Okay. I mean, I can touch it.
No, we're not... what if you touch your lips or your eyes? No! All right,
mate,
here we go.
If your head swells up to twice the size of it, the size of
right.
a normal person's
Can you
head.
Sign this disclaimer before I give this to you?
Just fucking open it. Come on.
Hey, come on.
And well done. One's green, one's red, and you haven't argued over them like we used to argue over penguins when we were kids.
Because all penguins taste the same.
No, they don't. They're different when you're a kid. Blue ones are best.
Yeah. Of course.
We know now. Okay.
I've got my fortune here. Okay.
Right. What's it going to say?
Well, if I'd have opened this 5 minutes ago, before my wife came home, you will be graced by the presence of a loved one soon.
Aww.
Or you could have opened it earlier before you arrived somehow.
Yes.
And mine is just a fragrant lie. You will be successful in your career. That's quite insulting, really, isn't it?
Mm. All the best.
Right. It doesn't say what your career is. Yeah. Maybe.
I mean, to be fair, Matt, don't know. Right, before we get to our top 10 lists, mm-hmm. have any of us got honourable mentions for things that are not on theirs that they couldn't get in?
Can we throw one in a piece, or is it like a couple?
I've got three.
You've got three? Okay.
I
have like one, kind of one and a half.
Okay, what are yours that didn't make the list?
My one that didn't make the list, which is going to, I know is going to upset people instantly, is Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12. Iron Man match?
Nowhere near mine.
So that's fine.
Only because it was the first, like, hour.
It's 10 best matches of all time, in your opinion,
using
the rules of using the rules of no person being in the list twice, two matches in one show.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm hoping we get some different stuff, but there's going to be some stuff where we cross over, and what we'll probably end up doing there is whoever names it first will end up probably doing most of the talking about it and then just skip over.
To be fair, I'm actually quietly confident that I think there's one match on my list that we all might have.
Mm-hmm. I think there's two matches on my list that we'll all have.
I mean, what I've done specifically, because I'm assuming we won't discuss matches twice.
We'll scoot over them.
I mean, half of mine is out of spite. I've deliberately tried to pick which would be your favourite two or three matches and put them as 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
Good, good.
So we'll see how that plays out.
What I'll say is, if one of us names a match that you've got further down your list, don't say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a poker face about it and name it later on.
Okay.
Okay?
Cool.
Don't go, shit, that's my number one, because it kind of does ruin the tension of the entire podcast, guys. You know.
And that's exactly what everyone's tuning in for, tension, because that's what we're known for.
Well, the vague sexual tension between the three of us is...
This is why your career will go well, Matthew. This is because you understand the big picture. For me, the big thing with picking this is it's... As I didn't really understand until I had two nephews... that I have a favourite, but it changes every day based on how I feel and who's been better to me in that particular moment. So this list could be different if I did it a week or a month.
Right, so...
I agree with you. My list will be vastly different in a week.
State of mind and what's on your
hand. I'm confident in my list staying the same because of why I picked this off my list. So my list, to me, isn't the 10 greatest matches in terms of 5-star ratings or how epic it was. Every match on this list has something to that. It was something that personally affected me,
and
got me involved in wrestling. So, like every match on the all 10 matches on the list I have a story attached to them and why.
Yeah,
that is how it should be. There's no reason, if we're just going to list it in the order that Meltzer's given it 5 stars.
Yeah.
Then first of all, there's more than 10 5-star rated matches,
yeah. And we all know what number one would be.
Yeah. So there's no reason to do that. Right, honourable mentions before we get to the list.
Okay, honourable mentions. I had two that just fell outside the list.
Okay.
One was the Hart Foundation versus Demolition from SummerSlam 1990.
Which, as you probably know, is one of my favourite matches of all time. It's not in my list, but it's one of my favourite matches.
It's a cracker, isn't it? It's 2 out of 3 falls. Oh,
absolutely
wonderful.
Brilliant. Shenanigans are plenty.
Yeah.
Where no one went, Crush looks completely different to the other members of Demolition.
Yeah.
Because he's a foot taller. But that is a good match.
And Rugged Ronnie Garvin versus Greg the Hammer Valentine in a submissions-only match from Royal Rumble 1990.
Which is actually decent. That's all to do with the leg
Grace, leg and story. Yeah. And they slap and chop and knock the fuck out of each other in a way that you just didn't see.
Yes.
So it was. It felt like someone had accidentally snuck like an old-school NWA match onto the bill there as well.
What are your honourable mentions?
Like I said, Shawn Michaels, Bret in the Iron Man, and the other one was any of the Bryan Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness matches.
Okay.
Preferably the one where they worked it round where Bryan wasn't allowed to hit Nigel in the head.
Ooh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, and then Nigel was a complete dick about it.
Mm-hmm. My honourable mentions are Bret Hart, Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13,
yeah,
which is
yeah.
not in my top 10 despite
yeah.
being...
Yeah, I don't know how that did... I look at it now and I don't... No, now I know. I look at what I've got.
Yeah,
and now I know
that's
what I've
got. Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's the thing, is I look at that and go, it's two of the best wrestlers ever, but they're not in my top 10. And the thing with that match is the reason that every single wrestling promoter in the world thinks they can do a double turn.
Oh, and every single wrestler thinks they should pass out in a submission hold.
Yes.
Yeah, that as well.
Yeah, just tap out. Come on. It's not real. Mm-hmm. Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn. The one, I forget
Ooh,
which show
it
was on.
Was it the Hardcore Heaven one?
It's the first one that they
had. Oh, so
the one
where they got Living Dangerously.
The one where they got the 5 more minutes at the end of it.
Man. Yeah, Living Dangerously.
Yeah. Chris Benoit versus William Regal from the Brian Pillman tribute show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is on YouTube. Is absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's do this.
Cool.
I'll start, because I've got it right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
My number 10 is Bryan Danielson versus Kenta, Ring of Honor, Glory by Honor, Night 2, the Manhattan Center in New York. Ridiculously good. Half an hour long match. The last 5 minutes of submissions and go to sleeps and horrible elbows to the head are absolutely unbelievable. And also, this match is tremendous. Here are some other matches on that show.
Okay, go on.
Right, I'm just going to give you 3 other matches on that show, just so you can put into perspective how strong Ring of Honor was at this point. Homicide and Samoa Joe against the Briscoes.
Christ.
The Kings of Wrestling, Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli against Austin Aries and Roderick Strong for the Ring of Honor tag titles.
So good. You named your son after one of them.
Correct. And Nigel McGuinness versus Naomi Shimarafuji.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrible show. Wrong.
Yeah,
and there was loads of... There was even... The sort of first 3 matches were great as well, but it, the whole show...
So what year was this again?
It's the one that I've not written the year down. I believe... I think 2005? 2004, 2005, I think. But just absolutely brilliant. I mean, I'm going to look it up now, just so I can make sure I get the
action. Here's something that occurred to me. Now, I had a couple of Ring of Honor matches that nearly made it in. Primarily, it was the Nigel McGuinness match from Liverpool. Not the one with Bryan Danielson,
yeah,
so I didn't see it. But his match against Samoa Joe. But I can't enjoy that as much anymore.
Mm.
Because I know, because I did things at the time that blew my mind.
Yeah.
But now I go, oh God, why are you doing that to yourself?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And I found that with some of the stuff. There were certain matches that at the time I went crazy for. But now I look at it and I go, I struggle to watch it knowing the legacy that match and other matches like it had on the person. Especially when it's someone like Nigel who I'm now bona fide mates with.
Mm.
And his career, you know, argue the toss one way or another.
It's 2006.
Probably. Okay. You can argue the toss that his career was cut short by a lot of the stuff he did. Mm. It almost feels a bit like a guilty pleasure with some of those matches.
The thing with this match, though, would this be the match that sort of broke Kenta in the Western market?
Yeah, because that was the time when Ring of Honor had the Noah hookup.
Yeah.
When Noah were the hottest promotion in Japan and not New Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, because they had Marufuji and Kenta, who were absolutely, and Takeshi and Marufuji as well. So they had a lot of talent. And you know, it's weird how cyclical Japanese wrestling is. In the you know, at the minute, New Japan's still massive, and they're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But companies like All Japan are starting to make a comeback. You know, it's interesting times. But for me, that sort of mid-noughties period of Ring of Honor, this is after Punk had left. But that period, just everything's brilliant that Ring of Honor did. I remember watching it on the Wrestling Channel. I've still got a lot of the DVDs on my shelf over there from that sort of period, and it's the reason why I still get excited when I see guys from that era. So seeing Roderick Strong in NXT, you know, it just popped me every time. There's a reason that Joe and Roddy came, and Hero came to work for Progress, and it's mainly based around that period. It's definitely on my list, by the way. I've deliberately not chosen any Progress matches because I bang on about Progress enough. So, you know.
But it was such a time of growth as well. Mm. When you think of the class of 2005, 2006, especially as it's interesting now when you look at WWE and NXT, a lot of guys who at that point were kind of going, you know what, we'll never get signed. Let's just go out and do what we do. Mm. And there's been such a seismic shift of late.
It's funny because it kind of comes in like spits and spats, because I ended up just randomly watching some Dragon Gate USA the other day. Mm. And on the show was Dean Ambrose, Akira Tozawa, Rich Swann. I'm trying to think. There was a few others that were like, I think Daniel might have been on there as well. But it was like, I was just going through.
Would that been from the year the Nexus when he got released and then he came back?
Yeah, yeah.
Neville would have been on it.
Neville was on it, yeah, absolutely. Even people like Jimmy Jacobs, who's now with WWE as well, but behind So it's funny how that works, because I remember like a lot of people would probably expect me to be hugely into Ring of Honor while I'm wearing a Danielson and Morishima t-shirt as well. It's like, but it was that time period where I went back to it, and then not long after that time period where I kind of left again. So I remember that time period fondly as well.
Who wants to go next with their number 10?
Shall I go in? Jump
yes,
in.
Go, Christopher.
Well, we have a pattern here. We're going anti-clockwise.
Nice.
Just to paint the picture of our arrangement.
No, it's clockwise.
Oh, it's clockwise.
Yeah,
but not. All right. Pretend we're in Australia. We're going anti-clockwise.
The clock's still got to. Never mind. Carry on.
Okay.
Number 10.
My number 10. It is from King of the Ring, 1994, and it's Owen Hart versus the 1-2-3 Kid.
Mm.
Ooh, solid.
Good. Yeah,
because whenever I think about one of my favourite matches, there's a few that just pop in my head straight away, and that one always does. Mm. And for me, it's kind of my list kind of started telling me a lot about myself. And again, it's that interesting. Everything's got a story. Everything's got a point. And I realised I have a very short attention span. And this is one of the best examples of the phrase, you know, a long match is not a good match necessarily, and a good match is not necessarily a long one. It was, I can't remember how long it went. Can't have been longer than about 6 minutes. It was a sprint, and it was brilliant from the first, for me, a lot of times, a good match is about that first impact. Another member I mentioned, in fact, this is an honorable mention, Shawn Michaels and Undertaker.
Yeah.
The fact, for me, one of the things that got me in that match was the very first point of contact between them was that boot from the Undertaker, and you knew, wow, this is going to be good. When Owen Hart hits that baseball slide drop kick to the Kid, who has already been pile-driven three times by Jeff Jarrett earlier in the night, comes out, wipes him out, dives on him. It's in light of conversations this week, you know, there's a lot of people going, well, that's no way to do a match. But in this case, it suited Owen Hart perfectly. It suited the Kid. They had an amazing back and forth match, even in, and it never let up, especially in a slightly more modest paced era of WWF. And there were moments you thought the Kid could do this, because it would have set up potentially Kid versus Razor Ramon in the final.
Which
would have been a very interesting match in itself. And I absolutely adored it. It's one of those matches as well that I like to show to people, because again, you're not taking up a load of their day. It's all action. You can tell who the good guy is, who the bad guy is, and it's great.
Yeah, I agree. I've just thought of a quick pun. American Dragon Quest.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. More of a niche role-playing game, but I have got a slime from it tattooed on my elbow. So, good. Matthew.
Elder Scrolls, Big Skyrim.
Nice.
Fucking hell. Well done. Well done. yes, me, number 10. Bam. Travis Banks versus Pete Dunne from Fight Club Pro, first female of Fight Club 2017. I know you said that you weren't picking progress matches, but the reason I picked this match was because...
I also did a top 10 progress matches like about 2 months ago, so I don't need to
talk about it. The reason why I picked this match is because, for me, this is still the best reaction I have ever been part of in wrestling. And this is my, at the end of this year, going into next year, will be my 14th year somehow being involved with British wrestling. And I don't think I've ever been involved in a main event that had such genuine emotion. And like, it's that funny thing of the so-called purists will probably say that Trav and Pete have had a million times better matches in terms of mechanics and moves and stuff. But the way they put this match together, without giving away the match, because I want everyone to go and watch it, was so clever. And then the genuine outpour of emotion and how much it meant to both guys. And this is on a show that's named after Nixon Newell, who's having her last match in the company that arguably, set her on her way. So for me, it was just like a special moment. Maybe it's the moment more than the match, but like for me, that was just unbeatable. And this is even comparison to the Dream Tag Team Invitational weekend where, I got to introduce the Elite versus British Strong Style. I got to introduce like Penta and Phoenix and do all this really cool stuff. And I've done so many amazing stuff like for Future Shock. I've commentated on Jack Gallagher versus Zach Gibson. And, there's so much I'm proud of, but I don't think I've ever been in a room where everyone was just in that moment. And it was just
I'm blurring a bit. Was I there for that one?
I genuinely can't remember. I feel like you were there on that weekend, but I feel like it was the day before. I think
it was a Saturday. It might have been a Saturday because that was the night. Was that the night where Nixon had the match with Martina?
No, Nixon had a match with Kaylee Ray.
If you've been affected by Alzheimer's disease,
but that's it's like obviously I'm going to be positive for companies I work for, but I genuinely believe that show is just worth your time because it's such a special show and a special moment. And it's just awesome. And I was super, super pleased to do you know what, actually? It's not even to be part of it. It was just to be there.
To be in the midst of it.
Yeah.
Because, we've all been involved in pro wrestling shows, but like a lot of creative exploits, when it's going really, really well, it's like an out-of-body experience, isn't it? It feels like you're detached. You're watching from the outside.
Yeah.
I think that's the mark of things. Oh, by the way, No Mantar's Sky.
Oh!
Nice.
Okay. Anytime. Good.
Nice.
Anytime.
No Big Boss Man Sky.
No Cry.
Right. My number nine is from Dragon Gate in Japan. It's Dragon Gate Dead or Alive 2014, which is the 5th of May. It's on Aichi, Japan. It's for the Open the Brave Gate Championship, which was Flamita defending against Jimmy Susumu. And that is the first match I watched where someone said to me, I was reading a book by a wrestling writer called Arnold Furious, who comes to Progress Shows, who I really respect and really like. And he writes for Mania and has books on Amazon and stuff. And he wrote a couple of books about just watching a year's worth of Japanese wrestling. And they're really good books. Called Big Arms Pro Wrestler Adventures, in case you want to look them up on Amazon.
Brilliant name.
And they're genuinely a couple of quid. They're really worth your time. And I remember reading this review of this Dragon Gate show, and he likes Dragon Gate, and I'm reading through it. And I'm reading it thinking, he did what? Like, what? You know when you read a review of something, you're like, what? How can you jump off from the apron, over the ropes, onto the second rope, and then do a 450 splash? How? How is that possible? So I went and found it and watched it online, and it is... Oh my good God! This is why Flamita is in Super Strong Style, because from that point onwards, it was one of those. I sent the match to John. I sent the match to Glenn, and went, guys, look at this man. He's unbelievable. And this is about a year ago, and we started thinking maybe we'll get him for Super Strong Style next year because he's never wrestled in the UK. Jimmy Susumu is also great because he's bigger than Flamita, so he just throws him around. But Flamita, despite being small because he's a luchador. Has nuts moves. Like, he does a muscle buster lung blower on a man bigger than him in this match. I'm making it sound like it's spots, but it isn't. There's loads of psychology in there. The whole story of the match is Flamita's dead quick, but not as strong as Susumu. Susumu's slower than Flamita, but stronger than him. So there is a proper clash of styles, and it's... The crowd are so into it. Dragon Gate crowds, and Matthew Webber backed me up on this, Dragon Gate crowds are younger than normal crowds.
Yeah.
They're a lot of women as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's weird. How it's aimed in Japan is very different to how New Japan's aimed. New Japan is aimed at, you know, it's aimed at 40-somethings. You know, it's like me, nearly, and you.
And
me in Seoul.
Matthew just...
If anything, you're a bit too old for them in Seoul.
the whole concept of Dragon Gate is odd, and that's one of the reasons why it's so fast. So if you've ever seen the Dragon Gate six-man match that's on Ring of Honor show back in, I think, 2009.
Yeah.
The one where you check your DVD to make sure it's playing at the right speed.
Yeah, it's the one that Meltzer went nuts for.
Yeah, gave it 5 stars. Yeah. And it's just all that. And how fast people in Dragon Gate run is terrifying.
The thing you've got to remember about Dragon Gate and Toramon is that it's not a Japanese wrestling company, it's a Mexican wrestling company because of Ultimo Dragon and Skyder originally. Basically, the old classes in Toramon, you'd graduate in Mexico and then go to Japan to wrestle.
Yes.
So it's more of a lucha promotion than it is a...
It's not like lucha, though.
It's Jack Lucha thing, which started with Michinoku Pro.
The Michinoku Pro match in ECW?
That's the thing. It's the same guys behind it, because Ultimo was involved in it, and then you've got Gran Hamada, and then you've got sort of like Sasuke as well, and like a few others. And it was that sort of movement. But the thing with Toramon was actually, because Ultimo Dragon was in WCW at the time, he stole a lot of westernized stuff. So there's a lot of run-ins and shenanigans, and like the philosophy that they're all in factions and groups, but there's always one main bad guy faction, and they are the baddest of bad.
And they have the best stable names ever.
Yes.
I love the fact that at the minute in Dragon Gate, it might not be necessarily at the minute because I'm not massively caught up on it, but certainly a couple of years ago, there was a stable called Millennials.
Oh, they've split up now.
Which is exactly what I hate about the world.
But the funny thing about the Millennials was they were all that age, but then their gimmick was that they all had Mexican gimmick, so that's where Yoshiki Santa Maria came from, who's an exotica, who's a guy that dresses as a girl. That's where Flamita's first group was in, and they all had Mexican influenced gimmicks, which is just weird and Dragon Gate-y.
I went to a Dragon Gate show in Miami in 2012 when we were at WrestleMania, and watched people like BB Hulk and stuff like that, and that was a great show. And I really, really, really... First time I ever met Akira Tozawa as well. Many blonde women. I really, really enjoyed watching that. Just because the pace of it, it's nuts. If you watch someone like Will Ospreay wrestle, Will Ospreay is not traditional New Japan.
No.
Will Ospreay and Ibushi as well are that. And again, it's not a Dragon Gate style, but it's the style that suits... Mm-hmm. There's a definite market for that in Japan, but it's so weird that there's no real crossover.
They're kind of like the Avengers of the Japanese wrestling world in the sense that it's just a spectacle, and you just kind of, you know, there's a dude throwing a shield around and there's a big green guy and whatever, and you kind of go, it's still really good fun.
It is. It's great. But that match wouldn't have been out of place in New Japan just based on how it was put together. And if you can find it, it was on YouTube for a bit and it's not anymore because I checked earlier on. So, buy it legally through Dragon Gate's website and watch it. So it's on Dead or Alive 2014, which is a great show in general, full stop.
The thing about Flamita as well is I remember when you said, you told me he does this, and everyone does that. Well, how does someone do it? Then you watch it and you're still not sure.
Yeah.
You see it happens. but you don't know exactly how.
So as a Toramon nerd, the reason why I love this match, and this is why I'm smiling when you're telling me about it, is Jimmy Susumu used to have a rivalry with Dragon Kid, and Flamita reminds me of early Dragon Kid in the sense of, how are you doing that?
Because Dragon Kid was the first person who used to do the somersault.
The Dragon Rana.
The Dragon Rana, which is in some wrestling video games.
Yeah.
No Mercy. Wonderful. But you have to unlock it.
Here Comes the Pain. It's in Here Comes the Pain.
Christopher, what's your number 9?
Heyman, Raving Rabbids.
Good work.
Thank you. What's up? 9. That's why I glaze when you're talking about Japanese wrestling. It's not because you just talk about stuff I don't understand. It's because I'm literally going through every video game I've ever played or heard of. Number 9. And this might be, in many ways, the most hipsterish one. Because if you want to watch it, you can't. You physically cannot watch this. And the reason being is because...
George Hackenschmidt.
It was me and Matt Soul. We went together to the... Colosseum. No, because this, to my knowledge, was not filmed.
Okay.
And it also shows, it goes, how many of these amazing matches must have happened at the time and have been lost forever. It was 1995, it's the Colston Hall in Bristol, and I was lucky enough to see Robbie Brookside and Dave Taylor versus Vic Finlay and Doc Dean in a best out of three falls tag team match that was absolutely fantastic. And considering then, it's one of those things, even at the time, I knew it was brilliant, and I really enjoyed it. I was on the edge of my seat throughout. But even and now looking back, going, I wish I could have gone back and said, don't even blink, don't waste a moment. Let your eyes dry out. I don't care. Just don't miss a moment of this, because the four of them, especially because you had the dynamic in there of... I'll have to basically tell you about the match, because no one can watch it.
And
I'll guarantee no one listening to this has seen it. Because no one else was there. If you were, # Tuesday Night Jaw.
Yeah.
Although you're probably from Bristol, so go to the village computer to use it. Now,
sorry, people of Bristol. Christopher Brooker's opinion does not reflect the general opinion of Tuesday Night Jaw.
That they say out loud. Now, it's one of those ones. At the time, the story was the former Liverpool lads, Robbie Brookside and Doc Dean, who'd split up and had this blood feud where they'd been beating each other up. And Fit Fenley had just returned to the area, just to come to the UK from wrestling overseas. He was someone I recognised from watching back in the day on TV on World of Sport. And they'd had a singles match the month before that Finlay had won in a shoddy manner, typically so. And it meant that they had a chance to renew these old rivalries. You had Dave Taylor and Finlay, had all kinds of stuff. So you had basically four of the best wrestlers in the country, and arguably four that will stand up in the best of all time, somewhere on the list. And they just went out there, they had a great match. You wanted to see Robbie get his mitts on Doc Dean, you wanted to see them beaten up. They beat the life out of Robbie, kept him away from Dave. And when Dave came in, threw everyone around. I can't even remember who won. Genuinely, I can't remember who won. I think it was the bad guys, the villainous team. I don't remember. All I remember is it's one of the best matches I've ever seen in person.
How old were you in 1995?
I would have been 19.
So not a kid. So not a child. You definitely remember this vividly.
I remember it vividly. I remember where I was sat. I remember the Colston Hall was interesting because the ring was set up in front of the stage. I had a lot of fun memories of going to the Colston Hall back in the day. Even seeing Hiroshi Tenzan was over for a while.
Amazing.
So he was with Menacing Moto, as they called him, having a crash helmet match. Yeah, classic all-star. But it's amazing, the Superflies, the Knights, the Power Rangers, bless their hearts. and I even saw, I'm fairly sure, Marty Jones and Giant Haystacks once.
Wow.
Nice.
So it's... And seeing a lot of these guys pop up in WCW 2 years later was like, oh my God, look, it's Finlay and Dave Taylor and Giant Haystacks. It was a really... Every month, go to Colston Hall in Bristol. It was fantastic. Tickets were a fiver.
Prince Devitt of Persia.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah,
I'll
accept that.
I'll take it. And also Grim Fandango.
Nice. Yes, that's good.
Matthew, you're number 9.
My number 9 is The Rockers versus the Brainbusters from the 23rd of January 1989 on a Madison Square Garden show. The show is actually available through WWE's official YouTube channel in full for free. The reason why I love this match is, guess what? I didn't watch this in 1989 because I was one. I actually watched this like when I was still wrestling. And the reason why it stuck out for me was I was predominantly a tag team wrestler. I think this match was actually on Shawn Michaels' Heartbreak and Triumph DVD.
I have seen the match, so I am familiar with the match you refer to, sir.
I think that was the first time I ever saw it, and it just like blew my mind in terms of how to put a tag team wrestling match together.
And the Brainbusters, who were just absolutely, utterly tremendous.
Yeah, and it's funny because the match stands out for me in the sense that if I was a kid watching this match, I'd absolutely worship the ground the Rockers walk on. But for me, I took away just how talented the Brainbusters were. But what's really funny is me and Sam Bailey, who used to be my tag team partner, we basically stole this match a million times over, including the double suplex onto your feet, double super kick. We once did it on the show, and as the two guys fell out of the ring, me and Bailey looked at each other and just shouted, "We're the fucking Rockers," which is still one of my favourite moments between us. But it's just brilliant. It's just pure joy to watch, and like, it's such a brilliant lesson if you want to be a tag team wrestler. If you are a bad guy and want to be a bad guy, watch Tully and Arn. If you want to be the babiest of baby faces in the world,
Tully and Arn have been reincarnated as the Revival.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, even like,
and they're not dead, for the record.
No.
Tully as well, it's an interesting one because the first actual WWF VHS I borrowed was Survivor Series 88, and it started with that frankly ludicrous
tag team
elimination,
which is great,
and
because the Conquistadors,
a lot of it passed me by at that point. But the thing about Arn and Tully is you got who they were. Tully in particular.
Yeah.
Because Arn was the one, the cleanup guy, and Tully was the snivelling prick who would come in if the guy was down and didn't want to. Watching him try and avoid the powers of pain, trying to avoid getting in the ring with anyone bigger than him.
Everyone should watch Tully Blanchard against Magnum TA in a cage as well, with the whole wooden spike in the eye thing. Mm-hmm. It's just so good. A very underrated man.
Absolutely.
And I do think there's contract issues that stopped the Brainbusters from being in WWE for long, wasn't it? Because they weren't there for long.
Yeah,
there was other stuff.
And,
allegedly. So to number 8. My number 8, more modern. January the 4th, 2016, in the Tokyo Dome, New Japan Wrestle Kingdom 10, Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles. The first match where I really decided I loved AJ Styles. I always appreciated him. I've said this on the podcast before. Wasn't a huge AJ Styles fan, partly because I've not watched a ton of TNA, partly because when he was in Ring of Honor, there was people in Ring of Honor I preferred. Now, I appreciate what a god of wrestling he is, and I'm sorry for not loving him before.
So AJ, if you're listening, you can relax now.
Yeah, and also, let's not forget, this match is quite significant because they both handed their notice in right before the match. So, on their way out, they'd gone, we're both leaving. See ya. Because AJ debuted in the Rumble about 20 days later, and Nakamura turned up on NXT. Everything about the match, the show of respect at the end, we're talking about whole moments, the show of respect and the sort of fist bump at the end is absolutely unbelievable. And a phenomenally good match on a show full of phenomenally good matches. But for me, just, it elevates the fact that they're such strong characters. AJ, when he went to New Japan and joined Bullet Club, just gave him a massive lease of life and made him... He was already a fantastic wrestler, but it made him really interesting to people who weren't won over like me previously. And Nakamura is Nakamura. So that and watching the match at the time, I watched it, I think maybe 24 hours after it happened. And watching the match at the time and then realising, reading all the stuff on the internet and going, what? They're both going to WWE? This is insane. So, and then obviously the next day, you know, Edge had to be kicked out of Bullet Club because that's how it works. Mm-hmm. They don't leave any threads unclosed. But a great match. If you haven't got New Japan World, it's worth getting. Get New Japan World and go back and watch their archive. They did a press conference yesterday where they said they're going to expand what's in their archive.
Oh, cool.
So they have a lot of their shows from the last 3 or 4 years where they've been filming things religiously, but they haven't necessarily got the full G1 shows on there yet from, say, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But they will soon. So
yeah, that's I must admit that's one of the reasons why I kind of flip-flop with New Japan World and having it, because it doesn't quite have the back catalogue that
it's
I'd like it to.
It's worth getting as a big show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely value for money if you want to watch Best of Supers or G1.
This is why, like, I think once you sign up for the WWE Network, I don't think, unless all of a sudden you've got a bit of a financial crisis on, no one's ever going to cancel it.
No.
Because you're just not going to watch everything that's on there.
No.
Especially, I mean, but when I got it the first day it came out, by using an American address and a proxy server, and the first day it came out, I remember thinking, "God, there's tons here." But then I was still searching for some stuff that wasn't there, like I wanted to watch obscure episodes of Nitro from 1997.
Yeah.
But now everything's there, and it is my way of, you know, if my wife's not here and the boys having a nap, it's like, well, what can I watch for an hour on there?
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that. I love it when people message me and say, I've subscribed to Demand Progress, it's brilliant, I've watched everything you've ever done. I'm like, that's great, but that's a lot of content. It's like a good, it's 250 hours worth of content, but you know, that's only 10 and a bit days.
Someone should just go on Demand Progress and edit together every time you've said my friends.
Yeah, it's deliberate, it's my catchphrase, mate. It's,
I know, but I want to see it all in one place to save me having to watch wrestling.
I actually want some, I'm going to tweet this out, I actually want someone to point out the funniest things I've done in the ring there, so I could make a compilation video of me messing around, because I love doing it. And some stuff really, 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 really works. And we have, like, when the two mums are in the front row, that's one of my favourite things I've ever done.
Yeah.
But we film them, but we don't necessarily use them. I'm not fussed, you know, I'm not fussed about my intros and stuff being on there, but people seem to like them, so, you know, fair play. So that's my number eight. What's your number eight, Christopher?
Eternal Dark Nesse Rios.
Bloody hell, mate.
I know. Good. I've been bleeding.
Eternal
out my
Dark
nose.
Liger.
Ooh.
Ooh. Clash of Eternal Champions.
Nice.
I kind of got on an obscure beat 'em up track for a while.
Bye, mum.
What are we on? Number eight.
Number eight.
Okay. And this.
Or if you're watching, if you're thinking of The Simpsons now, can anyone burp? Because I can't.
No.
I want to do the number eight.
Oh, number
yeah.
eight. Number eight.
Yes. A single plum
floating in perfume
in an old man's hat.
Well, we nearly had Mighty Number Nine for all three of those as well, on the number nine ones. Number eight, which fits in quite nicely for me, is from NXT TakeOver Toronto, and it's DIY versus The Revival. Two out of three.
It's tremendous.
It's out of this world. And again, it's the... question?
Legisuit Larry Dallas.
Oh, very good.
Sorry, carry on.
Larry Zbysko?
No, oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Other Larrys are available.
No, they're not. It's 2017. Carry on, sorry.
DIY versus The Revival was... And every time I've thought about what I've enjoyed most over the last couple of years, every show that The Revival on, they've come damn near close to stealing the show. And whether it was TakeOver London with Enzo and Big Cass, whether it was their stuff with American Alpha, everything they do just makes me happy. Their match with DIY and SummerSlam Revival last year, everything. And this was just the culmination. And it was such a good tag team match where... And I say this as someone who hasn't always been a massive fan of DIY.
Mm.
Again... Like you said about AJ Styles, I can appreciate them, I can like what they do, but you end up, when the story of a match has you rooting for someone, and has you going, because for me, there isn't a single match ever that isn't enhanced by having someone you want to win and someone you want to lose.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you're not interested in the, it can be brilliant, but if you're not interested in the outcome, you will lack that little spark, of polish. And a lot of the stuff where you want someone to win and someone to lose, that's the exciting one. And they just went hammer and tongs at it. There was never a moment, and especially I think, I don't know if you find this as a cynical wrestling fan, in your late 50s, much like I am, that all it takes is one moment in a match sometimes to take you out of it.
Yeah, something
will happen. And I've seen really good matches where they've just done something. And I now have a magnetic eye for logic flaws. If I see someone doing something, I go, well, that makes no sense. That looks really, really fake. But you're doing it because you want to do something cool now. Mm. I just go, well, that's cool, but I'm not interested. And there was never a point in this match in particular where every time they cut Gargano or Ciampa off, all the way through the finishing stretch, right their way up, even the finish made sense and was about as satisfying as you can get. Mm. And there was no one in that building that wasn't on their feet going, you guys deserve this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You deserve that win. You deserve every moment of this adulation. And they've been the matches where I've consistently been on the edge of my seat for everything. The near falls, the cutoffs, the tags. Oh, it's the joy. It's why I'm a fan.
Yeah. Genuinely, that was very nearly my number nine as well.
Mm-hmm. What's your number eight?
My number eight is Prince Devitt versus Gedo from New Japan, Kizuna Road 2013. It's the 5th of July show for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. The reason why I picked this match, because there's about a million Prince Devitt / Finn Balor matches that are phenomenal. The mental freeway between Ibushi, Loki, and himself comes to mind.
Yeah, great match.
Countless tag team matches with him.
It's a really good match between him and Neville that's on YouTube.
Is that one of the best of Supers Juniors?
I think it is. Yeah. Neville was obviously packed.
Yeah, but for me, like, there's two reasons why I picked this match. Number one, this was the moment where I really just looked at Devitt and was like, bloody hell, you're good. Because this was when Bullet Club was still new and fresh and just so different in New Japan. Like, for me, this was the period of time when New Japan have become the powerhouse that they became, because they sort of started to do away with the old and embrace the new. So this is when Devitt was super hot. Also, the story of this match is great. So the reason why this match is happening is because Devitt's the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, but he wants Okada's heavyweight title.
Yes.
As he keeps saying, he's gone through the junior division. So Okada says, well, I'll tell you what, if you defend your title, your junior heavyweight title against Gedo, then I will give you a title shot. And what's great about this is the whole match is basically new villain versus old villain. Mm-hmm. So there's these wonderful moments where, like, they'll do a sequence where, like, Bullet Club and Devitt, you know, crotch Gedo in the corner, and then there'll be a change round and Gedo will do it. There's, like, roll-ups, you know, kick-outs into chair shots, into other roll-ups, and it's just this wonderful match just of old villain versus new villain. And again, like, the outcome of the match doesn't spoil the match as an experience, and it also, I think it's probably the first time they ever did the moment where Devitt pointed the gun at someone, and, like, it's where Okada does the taunt, does the Rainmaker taunt in the end, and Devitt does the gun on him, and Okada looks down at the gun, and they just lock eyes, and it's like, oh, that's so fucking cool. And, like, that's what I love about this match. This is, like, peak Devitt cool and Bullet Club cool. So, yeah, I just proper love it. I think it's one of these weird matches that you can't get hold of. So don't think it's on New Japan World. Because I remember trying to get Briley a copy of it. Because I remember we spoke about this match before on one of the podcasts. And I remember really, really trying to hunt it down. So if you can find it, give it a go. Because that whole tour, I remember that whole tour being really cool. And that time period again in New Japan, it's sort of like, you know, when you go back and watch early NXT? Yeah. And go, oh, bloody hell, yeah, Neville and Sami Zayn had that mental match. And, you know, it's that you get to see where it started. So, like, that's what's really cool about it. And, yeah, go and check it out. It's cool.
Number seven for me, I saw on a DVD that I bought when I was out at WrestleMania in 2012. I bought it from WrestleCon. Because I couldn't watch it anywhere else. And that is El Generico versus Kevin Steen from PWG Steen Wolf. October 22nd, 2011. It's when El Generico finally wins the PWG title from Kevin Steen. It's a ladder match. It's at the usual PWG venue, which, if you don't know it, is the American Legion Post 308 in Reseda, California. And it is the absolute fucking best. because they, everyone knows they're best mates, and it's the culmination of, they feuded everywhere, and it was the culmination of finally Generico actually getting the better of him. It's absolutely tremendous, an absolutely wonderful match between two brilliant wrestlers, and two brilliant wrestlers that I remember watching that at the time and thinking, oh, just neither of them will probably ever make it in a WWE.
Well, one of them has, yeah. So, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, of course, one of them has. The other one, Orphans Mexico, something. but it's, go out of your way to legally download this show, I think, via High Spots.
Yeah, it should be.
Where you'll have to buy a download of it, and it's worth keeping anyway. Or buy the DVD or Blu-ray if you can, because, I mean, I'll be honest, pretty much everything from the last 6 or 7 years of PWG is, at the very least, good. And in many cases, absolutely tremendous. That whole show's really, really good anyway. There's a tag title match before it as well that's tremendous too. So,
can I ask you something about it as well? Was everyone behind L?
Yes.
Absolutely. Again, that's the, it's the emotion as well. It's that, yeah. Tell a story and bring it to a crescendo.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. It also features the ceiling tile moment.
Yes,
as well. so it's which is quite a nice breaking of character at the end, which actually makes it mean even more.
I know what you mean. Pon Kevin Wolfenstein.
Oh, nice.
Oh, very good. I just had
Wolfenstein. If you go by the guy who pronounced it when I was at WrestleMania, and went, "Oh, I love these indie workers like Kevin Stein." Yeah, all right, mate. Well, all the best.
Like the Wolfensteiner brothers.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And another one, Resident Neville.
That doesn't work.
Yes, it does. It's got V-I-L-E-V-I-L in it.
It's like saying Resident Neville. Resident Kevin Owens' arm.
Resident Neville. Have you not seen his Tron that's got evil right in the middle?
Lord.
Jesus, I mean,
started with the evil ones early on, and it worked.
Evil.
Hey, you know what? You're not my dad. I just wish.
Well, no,
you
I'm younger than you. It'd be really difficult. Also, your dad's dead nice.
He is. I didn't know. I'm glad you put nice at the end. I thought you had to. What?
Yeah. Sorry. I took a phone call.
God.
No, I didn't.
Checking on my dad. # Tuesday Night Jaw. Let me know how he's getting on.
You're number 7, Christopher.
Oh God. Well, number 7, we're going back to 1991, when Matt was in his 30s, spiritually. Yes. And again, this is from the VHS days, and I didn't watch this until like 1994, because it didn't arrive on VHS around then. It was War Games.
Yeah.
It was Ric Flair, Sid Vicious, Barry Windham and Larry Zbysko, subbing for Arn Anderson, versus Sting the Steiners and Brian Pillman.
That's when, is that the one where Sid Vicious accidentally powerbombs Brian Pillman on the roof of the cage? I don't mean on the roof of the cage by standing on the roof of the cage. I mean hoists him up, hits his head on the roof of the cage and then powerbombs him.
Yeah, because he doesn't manage to rotate him over.
Yeah.
And basically knocks him spark out. So there's that element of guilt too. He powerbombs him twice, they stop the match.
Is that the first or second really good War Games match?
Well,
the second one's got the Dangerous Alliance.
Yeah, it was a toss-up between those two for me.
The second one, about 94?
92.
92,
which was Dangerous Alliance, so it was Rick Rude, Steve Austin, Anderson, Eaton and Zbysko versus Sting, Ricky Steamboat, Nikita Koloff, Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
And it's just money. And I loved it. But I like this one more, just a little bit more.
This is the one that I remember better, if that makes sense. Like, this is the one that didn't stand out.
When you used to have to cover your, I don't know if you had to do this, Matt, but you probably had to do it. When you get school books, you have to wrap them in, you put
paper,
posters or whatever.
Newspaper.
I used to get WCW magazine. I remember my English book, English was English language and English literature, but the same lesson, but you had two different books.
Yeah.
My English language book was a picture of the War Games match, right? But my English literature book was a picture of the Miracle Violence Connection. So I'm the only and I'm sure my English teacher every day would just go, "Why have you got? Who are these slightly chunky looking, clearly very dangerous?"
That's my dad. And that's my uncle.
Uncle Terry.
What was the? You remember the Hulk Hogan and. It was Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage against 20 heels.
Oh, the double-decker Doomsday.
Oh.
Why are you doing
this? With a wrestler called The Ultimate Solution in it, and no one realised that was offensive. Bad.
Yeah.
But the war games. I'd love to see WWE, because they own the copyrights to it now, I'd love to see WWE do a war game.
I don't reckon they should. I think war games should stay where it was, because I don't think, if you look at the drama of those matches, now I'm not saying they couldn't do a good job.
Mm. There's no blood now.
But that's the thing, you're never going to have the violence that you had.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan generally of blood in wrestling, but if it had, you know, again, it's like everything. Use it sparingly and use it sensibly, and it can make a world of difference. And for this, you had, as someone who wasn't aware of the basic underlying plot of WCW, and it's a good, solid show top to bottom as well. There's a really good match between Lex Luger and Dan Spivey on that show for the US title.
I've watched this show not as long ago. It's excellent.
Two names that you wouldn't have put together.
Absolutely out this world. Such a shame. Great finish.
Such a shame Spivey got injured halfway through the Waylon Mercy character. Which, go back and watch the really early Raws.
Yeah.
The promos were exciting.
Literally, that's where Bray Wyatt comes from.
Yeah.
Totally where Bray Wyatt comes from.
So, I mean, from the very start, as soon as they get in the ring, it starts off with Windham and Pillman. And Pillman is made at this point for things like this. It's a plucky underdog who just knocks the piss out of Windham. And Windham just sells and sells and sells. And I don't know how it worked out like this, but the Horsemen won the toss. I don't know how that worked out for them, but they get the advantage. And all the way through the rest of that match, it just builds and it builds and it builds. And every so often something big happens and everyone gets their moment to come in and knock everyone around for a bit. And it was, again, War Games done right as one of my favourite things. And like another one, like the 97 one, which I think was the last good one. Which was the Horsemen versus the NWO. Especially because you had Chris Benoit, who was on fire. When someone comes in on fire and they just throw everyone around. And again, this is one of those matches that I'll show to non-wrestling fan friends and go, look at the sheer spectacle of this.
Yeah.
It's mad.
Yeah. Matthew, number seven.
Number seven, talking of big gimmick matches, it is the Hardy Boys versus the Dudleys versus Edge and Christian in TLC at WrestleMania X.
Which seven? I asked John Briley and Glenn Joseph for their top three matches earlier on. I also asked Scroobius Pip, and he picked matches 2, 4, and 7 from the Sheamus Cesaro Best of Seven series. I think may have been facetious, Mr. Pip.
Hey, just because you weren't paying attention.
I thought Best of Seven series was great. John chose it as one of his. I'm going to get their other ones up and mention the ones that don't feature elsewhere in my list. What did John Bryan choose?
Well, should we do them then? Because they might turn up in our list as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I won't. I'll only mention them if they come up.
Cool.
Bryan did choose it in his top three matches of all time.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's that thing of you got to keep in mind that, like, not only am I younger than you guys, but, like, I didn't watch wrestling as a kid. Like a little kid. So, for instance, me and Chris have had this conversation before. Like, I don't have the same, like, emotional attachment to Bret Hart that a lot of people do that are my age, because they would have grown up and idolized him. So I sort of came into wrestling when I was like, probably like I was about 12, 13. Yeah. So as I was coming in, it was very much Attitude Era. But again, like, obviously, like, I loved The Rock, I loved Austin, but like these three teams were the teams that made me love wrestling. And like, these are the teams that made me want to be involved in wrestling. And it was just because it was just so exciting. And again, like, I didn't have this preloaded, like, idea of what wrestling should be.
Yeah.
And I think that helped me appreciate, like, I think the one thing on my list, like, and I think, to be honest with you, on all of our lists, it's going to be the diversity of matches and reasons why. And I think, like, that's what kind of helped me really fall in love with wrestling, because I think I just kind of came in with this, no, all wrestling's boss. I do genuinely believe that all wrestling is bloody great.
It's like pizza.
On
average, pizza's brilliant.
Yeah,
and even pizza that isn't, well,
no, but no.
He still loves it.
Yeah.
He still loves it, but he just doesn't love him back.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, this match
for you, is it like being in love with a murderer?
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
So pizza's your Myra Hindley.
Wow, Christ, wow. No, maybe not that much.
Keep it light, eh?
Hey, it's vaguely topical. No.
Yeah, but no, I just loved this match because of because it was just so, it felt so cool. Like this WrestleMania to me like felt cool. Like the two WrestleManias that are really, really, really stuck out for me are WrestleMania 2000 and this one. Because again, this is one, like, you got to keep in mind that like this is when I'm coming in, and like I totally appreciate that they aren't the best Manias on rewatch. But
no, WrestleMania 17 is the best Mania.
Okay, yeah.
Full stop. It's the best. It's nothing comes near it.
And even if it isn't your favorite, you don't look at someone who says it is and goes, "You're clearly off your head." In the same way that I was to say, you know what, they've never touched the peak they ascended for WrestleMania 9.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's you know.
It's the best, mate. No one's knocking you up. It's the best Mania. It is, and it's the best Mania. That's not my favourite match on that show. My favourite match on the show is the main event.
Yeah.
But there's not a single weak point on that show.
No.
And I was sat in the nosebleeds for that and watching it live, and it's the first time I'd ever seen a match like that live.
Mm.
And you don't get the sense of danger. It's like watching the circus. If you've ever been to the circus, you watch a high wire act on TV, and the camera's up here.
Mm-hmm.
You're with them because that's how they film it. They show them up, so you don't get you don't see the distance down.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jeff Hardy went to do the walk across the top of the ladders and stumbled, I nearly vomited my heart on the person in front of me. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Good choice, mate. Cool. Number six for me is from Dayton, Ohio, in 1998, ECW Heatwave, Masato Tanaka against Mike Awesome. Now, at this point, when I eventually got around seeing that show, it was probably at least 1999. I'd already started tape trading, so I'd already seen both these guys wrestling each other in FMW.
Yeah, man.
And loved them. And I remember getting this tape. I bought this tape from HMV because you could buy the ECW tapes. They never have one in stock in Leicester. And I'd go in every day when I was at uni, and I'd check to see if they'd had any new wrestling tape deliveries. Whenever there's an ECW one or WCW one, which was starting to be out at the time, I'd buy it straight away. They're always £16.99, which is expensive for a VHS.
Well, HMV was always an expensive place to buy anything.
Mm-hmm. And then I'd take it home. And I'd watch it and have my mind blown because at the time ECW was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd seen those guys wrestle before. Mike Awesome in FMW was the Gladiator, rather than being Mike Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And Masato Tanaka is a nutcase.
Yes.
Who's still wrestling. Mike Awesome sadly no longer with us. This match is Mike Awesome killing the lovely Japanese man. For about 10 minutes, and then Tanaka going, "Fuck you," elbowing the shit out of him, powerbombing him over the top rope for a table, which at the time, we desensitized to those sorts of bumps. Oh. Now, that bump is horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible to and they've fought each other loads, and Tanaka's took a ton of those bumps as well himself. But it just, the story of the match being all about who can powerbomb the other one harder and who can hit strikes harder, and it being, essentially, it wasn't a match that meant loads in the grand scheme of things on the card because neither of them were champion at the time or anything like that. It was just, let's go out and do something nuts because there was a few FMW guys on the show. The same show had Rob Van Dam and Sabu against Shinzaki and Hayabusa,
mm-hmm.
which I remember being super excited by, and it's not very good. It's all right,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as good as Hayabusa and Shinzaki could have been. Mm. Just wonderful match that at that point in my life was exactly what I wanted to see out of wrestling, and it was a ridiculous amount of violence and a combination of American and Japanese wrestling, the two things I really liked about both sides of it. And I went back and watched this a couple of days ago and still love it. And it's, the video quality is not brilliant because it's ECW,
mm-hmm.
and it still tells a story, and it's not 25 minutes long, it's 12 minutes. Because they kill each other.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be any longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
And they start with the fans kind of going, "All right." And they finish with the fans going, Oh my fucking God. Because if that match had been in Philly at the ECW Arena or in New York at the Hammerstein, they would have gone batshit for it from the very beginning because they were the most hardcore of ECW fans. This is when ECW was starting to expand and doing shows further afield. Dayton's a fucking long way away from Philly.
Yeah.
And to still have that level of response that they get during that match is great. It's, you know, it's proof that sometimes, like we do with Progress, you can take yourself away from your initial territory, you can move elsewhere, and people still get what you're trying to achieve. So I love that match. Go and watch it on the WWE Network as soon as you possibly can. Right, Christopher, you're number six.
Okay, number six. And this isn't breaking the rules, because I would like to point out at this point, I was not in charge. So, number six, Jack Gallagher versus Zach Gibson. Well, you know, Jack Gallagher versus Zach Gibson in a submissions match from the Future Shock 11th anniversary show.
You can choose. You can still choose Future Shock. I'm choosing not to choose Progress stuff, that's all. You can choose what you want.
Well, I could have had more matches and then plugged. Oh, for God's sake. but no,
I know you speak highly of this match because you told me about it several times.
This is a match that I have a lot of time for because, again, it told a story. It was a year in the build. It went from, and you were on commentary for when this sort of began the year at the anniversary, but then you have two guys, again, who will kind of be the Steen and Generico of their generation. We'll look back and go, these guys tore it up. And it wouldn't... Would it really surprise you that much to see these guys doing this all over again in WWE one day?
Not
in the slightest.
Because
you'll notice that a match is good when other people go, we're having that. And they have now wrestled Future Shock many times. Yeah. They've wrestled for Progress. They've wrestled in ICW. They've had blinders everywhere. But this match is my favourite match of theirs because it's a culmination of a year-long story in itself, but one that goes back deeper and further because they came up together. Everyone knows their history, you know. They've both evolved. You can see it's the kind of thing where you show the photos of them looking like skinny kids. You got Jack Toxic and Match of the Night, Zach Diamond Gibson.
Yeah.
Back when one had hair and one didn't.
Pokemon Zach Diamond.
Hey.
I know I did Simon Diamond earlier, but I should have done that.
It's all right. But it's just everything, and it built around this idea that of giving up, of quitting, of tapping out, and it was a submission hold against submission hold. It was Jack Gallagher who was gone from being the grappler. He had literally just evolved into the extraordinary Jack Gallagher and had started to evolve into the man who is now a megastar. Let's call him what he is. He's one of the highlights of WWE TV for me, and he's doing great work out there. But this was just at the beginning of that, and I think it's just the beginning of Zach Gibson becoming this incredible all-rounder, this most booable man in British wrestling. And they went out and they had a match that told a story that, again, never let up, that everything was wonderful. And it built on their previous matches, and from the very beginning to the very end. And the finish is incredible. There's so many points where you go, oh, this is it, and it isn't. And, yeah, it's, again, this is one of those matches that I will show to people and say, look, if you, especially for me, people who are sceptical about British wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, that was the point where I went, do you know what? And it's a bit like being a comedian or any other artist. We go, the difference between us and the people at the top of the business is opportunity and fortune and contacts. It is not ability. Because that was the day I looked at those two and said, I will hold this match up against anything in the world right now. I will hold this up against any promotion, any show. And we might not have the biggest room or the brightest lights or the best cameras, but in terms of what happens when the bell rings, that can be compared to anyone's. Future Shock Wrestling on Demand.
Do you know what's really, really funny about this match? I would rarely do this and feel a little bit weird about doing it. But that match nearly never happened. Because the year before, at the anniversary show, it was Jack versus Zach, and it was good guy versus good guy. And Gibson was actually meant to face an import.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Michael Elgin.
Yeah, and that match nearly didn't happen. And that whole locker room fought that. And they fought for that match, because at that time, we believed that there was no better wrestlers in the country than Zach Gibson and Jack Gallagher. And what's so lovely to see was that we were right. And like it launched both of them, and that's what I think always helped Gibson and Gallagher, because it was real in the sense that they genuinely wanted to be the best wrestler in this country, and they, you know, they're friendly and they're on really good terms and they've had amazing memories, but like Chris says, as soon as that bell rings, there's some things that you can't hide, and competition is one of them. And that's why they are absolute gold dust when they touch, because they genuinely believe in their own brains, I'm the man, and if you want to prove that you're the man, you've got X amount of time to do it. And I absolutely believe that. And it's genuinely, like, you know, that's why I think Gibson is, like, I don't like to say underrated, but he is. Like,
underexposed.
Underexposed, yeah. Yeah.
Underutilised, possibly.
Yeah. And no, like, I'm really good choice. Well done, man.
Mm-hmm. What's your number six?
My number six is probably going to be the one of the more conventional choices on a list like this. It's Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat from Clash of the Champions, I think, number six. Two out of three falls.
Oh, 89, isn't it?
Yeah, 1989 NWA World Heavyweight title. I was really like, because they had that three-match series over that time period, and I was really, 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 really trying to sort of pick which one I really enjoyed. The Chi-Town Rumble one for me, like, I don't know why, but I always liked that match, like, really liked that match. But the reason I chose this one in the end was because it was one of the first matches I think I ever watched that had a really big match feel in a different way for me. So I had like Rock and Austin and Triple H and Taker and even Shawn, as like Shawn Michaels as well. But there's this thing about the NWA World Heavyweight title at times where you can't quite replicate the prestige of it, if
that's
that makes
lineage,
sense.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's on Billy Corgan's wall now.
Yeah, which is something, isn't it? But like, there's certain NWA matches that just had this feel, and this match had this feel, and like the fact that it's just JR that's on commentary with Terry Funk, and it just felt massive, and just it's almost 60 minutes long. It's like, because it's the match where they have the judges if they can't decide a winner, and it's just
48 minutes.
Yeah, it's just,
and it's got the post match shit as well.
The post match stuff where Terry Funk attacks, and it's so good. It's just so good, and it's just that thing for me of again that exposure at a time where I'd only really seen WWE or like Japanese wrestling, or you know, more obscure indie wrestling. And it was the first match that when I... Do you know what? It's actually the first match, I think, when I got Triple H. And I just went, he's Harley Race. He is Harley Race and Ric Flair. And like, and that really made me love Evolution, that and the whole bounty stuff and stuff. So it's a really important match for me to appreciate sort of what was before my time. And
And it's as well, it's such an... We're coming back to that backstory thing, because Steamboat and Flair had history going back through the years.
Yeah,
and
about 1976.
Ric Flair, who had been this villainous character for much of his career, this was during his little phase where he wasn't. Yeah. And it was almost like he... Because when you're the bad guy, and here's a hint to bad guys, you can't be as good as you can possibly be, if that makes sense. You can't necessarily let it all hang out. You have to be willing to show your ass. And this is why Ric Flair was getting away by the skin of his teeth. This is why he was world champion, because he was making other people look great, and he was coming in, he'd make you look like a star, and he'd leave. And this was his year where he went, you know what, I'm going to show everyone what I'm capable of. And in Steamboat, he had that foil where you could believe those two would want to do that. And then just everything they touch that year.
I still think Ricky Steamboat is the greatest good guy in wrestling history for me, because
only person who's never been a heel as well.
And because he just has something about him. He has empathy, but it's the way, like, I love...
Let's be honest, though, if he, like, 1989 Ricky Steamboat wrestled today, he'd be booed.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely.
What, he loves his kids?
Yeah. It was starting to get that way at a certain point.
Yeah, for sure. But the thing that always brought me back into Steamboat, even though I did always think Flair was cooler, was just watching Steamboat get hit. And I know that sounds in a really weird way.
You know what he used to do.
Though. He used to watch boxing matches. And it's one thing. There's one thing that I now weirdly do, and I don't mean to do, is I watch people's feet when they get hit. Mm-hmm. Because
you should be watching people's feet anyway.
I know.
It's a bit of a thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, it is my thing.
I mean, seriously.
I know.
It was something Regal showed me, and I was like, right, and now it's all I can
do. No, footwork is absolutely massively important and massively underappreciated. But it's just, it's things like that when he'd just be getting hammered, and it was, he had this way of firing back up. And I just loved, again, it's that thing of, it was just the perfect combination. Everything just worked. But I do agree with what you're saying about if Steamboat 89 was now, oh yeah, everyone hate him. But
right, so we're getting to the top five, and none of us have picked anything anyone else has picked so far.
No, but I think it could be interesting now.
It's going to change now. Yes. Although I might be alright with this one. So my number five is from All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
In 1992. Now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When I was into my tape trading and stuff like that, I used to have big, long play tapes full of... this is a tag match, and as most people will be aware, I'm not massively keen on tag team wrestling. Mm-hmm. This is a tag match featuring only one of the names of the people that you would expect to be in it, because normally it's a combination of four or five different people in various tag team scenarios. Mm-hmm. This match is what I think is the greatest tag team match in the history of wrestling, which is a bold statement. But it's my only tag team match on my list. Spoilers for the rest of my list. It is Kenta Kobashi and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi versus Doug Furness and Dan Crawford. It's the matches in Sendai, which is Kikuchi's hometown. The important thing to bear in mind about this is Kikuchi, compared to the other three, is a nobody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kobashi is a massive star who'd been out for a while because he'd not been well. This is for at the time the Can-Am Connections All Asia Tag Team titles, which is won by Kobashi and Kikuchi. You can see this entire match on YouTube. When you watch the match, it's phenomenal to just hear the reaction of the commentator loses his fucking mind at the end of this match. Japanese commentators are reserved.
Yeah.
This guy, like, at one point screams moonsault so loud he nearly dies. And if you've seen Doug Furness and Dan Crawford, or Phil LaFon as he was called in WWE, you'll know they were pretty good. They were in ECW as well. They were pretty good. They were technically sound. They were very strong. you've not seen the Japanese version of them, which is very much a almost like a more athletic version of Gordy and Williams. They basically kick the living fuck out of people. Every time they go to hit a lariat or something in this match, you can hear the crowd go, "Oh, don't hurt Kikuchi." It's tremendous. It's short for a match during a tag team match in all Japan at the time, because they were nearly an hour long. It's only 25 minutes. But it's one of the it's the best tag team match of all time. It's got a really good story of Kikuchi, who has always been a perfectly serviceable wrestler in Japan, but he's not Kenta Kobashi, who's one of the greatest wrestlers who ever walked the earth. And as most people be aware, one of my favourite wrestlers of all time. But this match, go and watch it. Just go to YouTube, put in Kobashi, Kikuchi, Furnace, Crawford. You'll find there's loads of different versions of it. Some of them all in one, some of them split up into two or three different sections. All of them have got the original Japanese commentary on. Mm. And you know when people say, "Oh, Japanese crowds are quiet," they're not for this. They're on their feet and losing their mind because they love Kikuchi. Sendai's not a biggest city, and to have a match of this magnitude being filmed for TV there, their TV programme, Super Power Series Tag 8, by the way.
So good. All Japan were just the kings
All Japan in the mid-90s is the best period of wrestling ever. To put this into perspective, Kobashi has got, if you base this purely on Wrestling Observer 5-star ratings, this got Match of the Year in Wrestling Observer in 1992. Kobashi has 23 5-star matches to his name. Misawa has 25. Nearly all of those 5-star matches came in All Japan and not in Noah. Toshiaki Kawada has a load. Akira Tawai has loads. Junakiyama has loads. Gordy and Williams are in All Japan. They've got loads. Johnny Ace and Steve Williams. It's just, that whole period is brilliant. It's one of my favourite periods of wrestling of all time. And it's my favourite tag match of all time, it turns out my fifth favourite match of all time. So, go and watch it, honestly. Watch all the matches we're talking about today, but seriously, go and see that one.
What's really interesting about All Japan during that period is there's so many great matches that don't necessarily always feature the four pillars. And obviously it's that thing of they're always the gateway.
Just explain the four pillars for people who don't
know. So four pillars were the four sort of, I guess, what they call aces in All Japan at the time. So it was Kobashi, Kawada, Misawa, and
Tawai.
Thank you.
And Akiyama was kind
Yeah, of. Akiyama was just a little bit behind him. So what I really love about All Japan during this time is that you'd always get these slightly more obscure main event tag matches, and they would just pleasantly surprise you. There is actually a YouTube channel that exists. It's called like Classic Puro 83 or something. And they have loads of old All Japan stuff because I think All Japan's a bit of a mess in terms of their back catalogue and what's available and who owns it and stuff. But they are, I think.
It's weird to see where they're at now, and they're still a good company.
Yeah.
But they were the best company in the world.
They never recovered after the Noah split, which was basically Noah was. Everyone that left for Noah were the heart and soul of All Japan during that time period. Yeah.
There's a lesson in All Japan as well, which is no one and nothing is infallible, and don't believe your own hype, because there were people in charge of All Japan at that point who thought, you know what, we are bigger than the people. And whilst it's true that no one person is bigger than wrestling, you have to be realistic, and it's the other way around too. So if everyone people like leaves your company, you are in for a hell of a challenge.
Also, All Japan is one of the greatest video games of all time, Giant Gram, and Giant Gram 2000, which is the slightly better.
Andre the Giant Gram.
Thanks, well done, mate.
Anytime.
Bonus points because it's a wrestling game as well, but that was based on All Japan in right.
Cassius, oh no mercy.
Get out.
WrestleMania 22. Oh, no.
But Giant Gram 2000 was made for All Japan before the Noah split as well. So, right in about 1999.
Because Kenta and Marufuji are on it, aren't they? Because they were young boys.
Yes, but also Vader's in it and Hansen's in it.
Isn't Brody in it?
Brody's in it as an unlockable character. Destroyer's in it.
We've still not played it. because I hooked you up with a copy.
No, and we need to play it.
Anyway,
so you're number five, Christopher.
In Your House of the Dead.
That'll do.
Thank you. My head hurts. Number five. Now, this is technically breaking the rules because if I sit... Now, let me explain why.
Two in a row where you've gone technically breaking the rules.
Because if we sat down with a list, we'd realise that there's probably one or two here who pop up elsewhere. And it is the 2004 Royal Rumble.
All right, I'll allow Royal Rumble.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. It's my favourite Royal Rumble.
Who wins that one, Chris?
I can't remember.
No, seriously.
Chris Benoit.
Yeah, and you're allowed to say it. We've discussed this on Tuesday Night Joe before. This is a serious point.
Yeah.
Chris Benoit did horrible things. But we can't take away the fact that, certainly for our generation, up until that point, he was the best wrestler of a generation.
Oh, he was outstanding.
And that's an undeniable fact.
I would say that this was his highest point, even allowing for WrestleMania that year. Now, the backstory of this as well, it's also what it means to you. Because at this point, I'd just moved to Manchester from Nottingham. Mm. And I hardly knew anyone in Manchester other than comics. I had no friends who were wrestling fans. And I had no means to watch or get videos of pay-per-views.
Sure.
So I had to wait for the Royal Rumble to come out on DVD that year before
Jesus.
I watched it. It did not come out until May. Because it used to take forever. And I avoided all WWE on the internet for 4 months so I could watch this Royal Rumble, right? And it was worth it.
Yeah.
Because I'd never seen that. I would never have seen that outcome. I'd never have seen that coming. And for me as well, it's... The 92 Rumble probably has more legends in it.
Mm.
The 2001 Rumble nearly gets it as well, if it's about favourite Rumbles. 92, for me, there was a lot where it plodded. It felt like that. For 2004, it felt like, when I watched it, it never let up.
Yeah.
And there was the story of your two young studs, as it were, Randy Orton and Chris Benoit, who were in at the start. You had Mick Foley's return. You had... That, for me, is it's lots of little moments, lots of little rivalries. And it never let up. Everyone had their little chance to shine. And I think the closing stretch where everyone's trying to get rid of Big Show is one of my favourite things. And again, as fans, we forget what it's like to watch casuals. My mate, Ben Schofield, Big Show's his favourite wrestler. Royal Rumble is... He's not a big wrestling fan, but he loves watching the Royal Rumble. And every time the buzzer goes, he's waiting for Big Show to walk in the ring. And just throw fuckers out, left, right and centre. He's going, right, it's getting a bit busy in there. Well, here we go. Fuck off. Fuck off. Fuck off. And that was the story. He was throwing out Kurt Angle and Jericho and even Cena back when Cena, and that led to the story with Cena and his knee injury leading into him and Big Show at WrestleMania. And it's that, to me, is the WrestleMania at its best. It's got feuds, it's got rivalries, it weaves in and out, and then there's people who maybe get a chance to shine that wouldn't. You get this moment where, and then let's not forget, obviously, Ernest the Cat Miller in 2004, where you had that moment where Benoit and Orton just looked at you and went, what?
Yeah.
And then pasted him and threw him out, along with his hype man. Matt's my hype man, by the way.
Yeah, I'd heard that really.
So
as far as satisfying Royal Rumbles go, and most Royal Rumbles are better when you watch them back, I find.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But that one, in terms of pure satisfaction, they'd have to be good to live up to that one for me now.
Oh, God, yeah. I totally agree. One, when we were coming up to doing the Royal Rumble, I was coming up to do the Royal Rumble list when I went back and watched it, because it's a fantastic Rumble. You can't knock that. Matthew, your next one.
My number five is Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio Jr., title versus mask, Halloween Havoc, 1997.
Nearly went on my list.
Again, honourable mention for me.
The reason why it went on my list was the time that I watched it. You know, when you sort of have a film and you watch it the right point in your life, so you end up loving it. So it's things like Clerks and Donnie Darko, if you like.
For me, it was Wanted, bizarrely enough. It just turned up at the time when I wanted to quit my job and go full-time as a comic.
Yeah, it's like... So
Slash Assassin.
This match for me was sort of when I was discovering a lot of WCW stuff that I missed, because when I first started watching wrestling, WCW is actually what I watched. Because me and my friend CJ Banks, actually, funnily enough, who's now a wrestler, we used to love WCW. We used to go around his house and we used to watch it. And then as I got older, I sort of ended up sort of going into WWE, ECW, and then independent stuff. So when Eddie and Benoit and everyone were sort of getting the run in WWE and they were releasing their best of stuff, this is when I really got a chance to see stuff that I'd never seen. And this match just like blew my mind, because I knew Ray was great, but I didn't know how great Ray was. And
have you not seen anything like him and Psychosis?
No. At this point, no. The only Ray I knew was Horns, Filthy Animals, Ray. So I was pleasantly surprised when I went back and watched it, because it's just this wonderful struggle of like an underdog and this man that was just at the peak of the Cruiserweight division, and it's this wonderful story where I there was genuinely points where I was like, Ray's going to lose his mask. Because then again, in my head, I read it preloaded. I was like, well, he did lose his mask. So is this the match that he loses his mask? And then
No. The match where he loses his mask is much more of a throwaway match.
I know.
Also, as well, I mean, technically speaking, he should never have put his mask back on.
Well, I know.
Which has caught him heat in Mexico.
Apparently. Yeah, I can imagine.
He dabs at his tears with a $100 note.
Fair enough.
But it's just for me, this is one of the matches that just stands out for, like, it was so cool to me, like, and it was cool in a style of like wrestling that probably is becoming very obvious here. I do have a particular style of wrestling, like quite like dynamic wrestling with a lot of smaller guys and whatever, because I am a smaller guy and I like that. That's what made me get into wrestling. I always cared about the small guys because, you know, like, I was like, oh, they're just like normal human beings. This is cool. Normal human beings doing extraordinary things. And these two guys were just, for me, were like the top of it. This was very, very, very nearly a Rey Mysterio versus Dean Malenko match, because Dean Malenko has a piece of my heart as well, because he's just...
Everyone should go and watch Dean Malenko against Scott Taylor.
With
the top rope debut.
Good Lord. Oh, it's in WWE.
It's for the WWE
light heavyweight. Yeah,
Scott Taylor, you hipster.
I know, he's Scotty Too Hotty.
All right, Scott Taylor's his name, isn't it?
So, yeah.
I don't know if he was Scotty Too Hotty or Scott.
No, he was Scotty Too Hotty. Yeah. But it is a great match.
Too cool,
because he first debuted in the light heavyweight tournament. As Scott
it's
Taylor.
It's something. Yeah. It's like a Backlash 2001.
It's Backlash 2000. It was no, it wasn't. It might have been the one where they had The Rock and Triple H Iron Man match. It'd be Judgment Day.
Couldn't tell you. I mean, off the top of my head, I don't know. I just know I love the match.
Okay. Yeah. And the other thing about Eddie that at that point is after, so it was 97, he'd been in WCW for about, 2 years?
Yeah.
And they hadn't known what to do with him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until this point where he let his inner bell end out that he became this prick.
Yeah,
in 97, because he was having good matches that played to indifference, and as soon as he started doing this and he had that run with Ray and he started doing the other stuff, I never feel like Eddie really kind of had a sustained run of, for many reasons.
Well, he
had that massive road accident, so he was out.
Also, he didn't have the run that he had with Art Barr in AAA, which was where he was the biggest heel in an entire country.
But that was the thing. It was
which is why he got signed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was sort of touch and go and spread it. But then he got that this little run of him toward in 1997 through possibly into 98. He was doing the stuff with Chavo as well. Fantastic.
He's almost like a this is a horribly cliched comparison, but he's almost like a David Bowie of wrestling. The amount of times he's reinvented himself
and
made himself relevant is phenomenal. But yeah, like he's incredible because, like, you know.
Well, we never expected to do that today. No, you know what I mean? That's no. our.
But do you know what I mean? Like, even like when he got fired by WWE and had that like Ring of Honor and independent run and came back, and then there's so many different points of his career that were just great. Like, and again, like another point of his career that I loved, I don't know if you guys loved, but was like him and Chavo in that amazing SmackDown tag division at the time, and I lived for that division and them matches. They were just awesome. So he's like genuinely like one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and he
might be my favorite.
Yeah, like
I
think.
Ironic, considering I don't think he's actually on my list at all.
See,
he's one of my favorite. He's not on my list.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I think I've got mine covered because Shawn Michaels will forever be my favorite wrestler, closely followed by Ric Flair, and then there's a fight for the rest. But yeah,
right,
number four
is the newest match on my list. From the 4th of January this year in the Tokyo Dome is Kazuchika Okada. I can't say it. Just Okada.
Kaz
Okada.
Big Kaz Okada.
Against Kenny Omega from Wrestle Kingdom. In 10 years' time, this might be number one.
Fair.
I've watched it 10 times since it happened. It's bloody brilliant. It's stupid in places. As a promoter, I would not want wrestlers to go out there and do some of the stuff they do. Dragon suplex off the top rope, but I think we said this when we did the round table at the time, like, just making a drop kick seem like a terrifying weapon. Yeah. That's what this match does.
Yeah.
Regular listeners will know I love New Japan. I love this match to bits. I love Okada. I think Okada's work, and let's not forget Okada is still 28, I think.
Yeah, he's not even 30. No.
Yeah.
And
him and Omega just absolutely tear the place to pieces. I was still surprised that Okada retained his title at the end of it as well. For me, I thought it was Omega's time to win, and then when he didn't win, I thought this is his time to go to WWE, and I don't think it is. You know what I mean? I think I think he's going to stick around there for a bit. But it's a wonderful match. I'm not going to bang on about it too much because I think we talked about it for roughly an hour in January. That's my number four. We'll see if either of you guys end up knocking it out. I know we all talk about Meltzer giving it 6 stars and all that sort of stuff, that's not influenced me in any way. If Meltzer had given this 2 stars, I'd still love it. It's just great. And I'll be honest, there's something in my brain. I'm looking through this, like, so the matches I've done so far, Danielson Kenta's 25 minutes, Flamita Susumu's 15 minutes, Nakamura Styles is about half an hour, Generico Steen is maybe 20, Tanaka Awesome's 12, Kobashi Kikuchi Furnace Crawford is 25. This match is 48 minutes long, and is definitely the longest match on my list. It never feels like it overstays its welcome. The match finishes and you look at your watch and go, oh, that was 48 minutes.
Yeah, even as someone who wasn't a big New Japan fan, and as much as I enjoy it, I'll be the first to say it didn't grab me, but then as someone who wasn't, we've discussed at the time, it didn't feel like it dragged.
No, it doesn't.
You go, really? That long?
It's just a belting match.
I think that match says a lot for, we're sort of talking about new generations in New Japan. That was a huge match to cement exactly what New Japan is now at this moment. And again, like I said it at the time, like Omega isn't necessarily my favourite wrestler, but bloody hell did he put a shift in and what a great match.
Interesting statistic that came out of New Japan's press conference thing they did yesterday is that they've already made more money this year than they made in the entirety of last year. So they're doing something right.
Yes.
You know, and they've got... But Japanese wrestling can come and go. It only takes a couple of people to break out in another promotion and all of a sudden it all switches, so...
No, if they've learned their lessons from the past as well.
Yeah, just don't make everything shoot fighting, guys.
Yeah, and it comes and goes in cycles, but then, you know, as long as... The hardest part for any wrestling or wrestler or promotion is to resist the urge to milk something past its sell-by date because it's really hard to take someone out on top and then use them to create the next one.
Yeah.
And then you don't have control. You don't know who's going to walk in the door of your dojo tomorrow and either be brilliant or who's going to step up.
Yeah.
But there you are.
Bang on. Right. You're number four.
Number four. It is from 2005. It is from Turning Point, TNA... It is Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles versus Christopher Daniels.
Otherwise known as the good match TNA had.
I'm joking.
But, you know, I'm pretty positive about wrestling. I'm just, you know, it's some stuff to do with TNA.
TNA has become like that relationship, not like the one I had.
No, let's not do that again.
No, let's not go into that. I've already been advised by several solicitors that I said too much. That relationship where you can forget about the amazing times because it ended badly.
Yeah.
But if you sit and you think and you go, you know what, the bit of distance, you realise how much good stuff happened. And there was a time without TNA, NXT now is what TNA should have become.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And at this point is the peak for me, when they were absolutely doing... In 2005, I could take or leave WWE.
Yeah.
And TNA, I was eager. I had a trader who would send me through the Impact episodes and the pay-per-views every month. And that was a highlight of my month, was to know I had that coming through.
Me and you went and watched TNA, didn't we?
When, yeah, we
when
did.
Joe was champion.
And so we are here now, you know, that's how it all works out. But this, to me, when they put the X Division front and centre, when it was about, when this was cutting edge, when they had, again, the distinction between their main events, which were brawls, and heavyweights, and their X Division, which was exciting in action. And I defy anybody to find a better X Division match than this one.
Also, the only ever TNA match that got 5 stars in the Observer.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, because to me it was as close to a perfect action-packed triple threat match as you can get. It made sense. There was a reason for it to happen.
Yeah.
A lot of times I see triple threats and 4 ways and 5 ways and 6 ways and God help us 12 ways, you know, whichever way you want to do it, any way you want it matches. It's just, hey, these guys will do cool things together. Whereas this one, what you had, the backstory, you had Samoa Joe was a monster coming in. He had killed everyone. And what did he do? He beat up Christopher Daniels. And then AJ Styles demanded, the champion at the time, demanded a match with him. And he became champion. He beat Samoa Joe, and he beat him convincingly. Mm. And
he didn't lose for about 3 years, did he, Joe, in TNA?
No, I think it was, what was it? So he arrived in 2005, and I think he lost to Kurt Angle when he came in. So it was over a year. It wasn't loads of time, but he was on an absolute tear.
Yeah.
And the story between the three of them, Christopher Daniels is still a bit of a dick. AJ Styles is a hero, Samoa Joe is a badass. There were moments that made you laugh, moments that made you cringe, and little pull the curtain aside, apparently the finish was fucked up.
Really?
Yeah, Joe has said that. I think it might have been when he was talking to Roddy Piper in my hotel room that one time.
Oh, yes.
He said the finish wasn't what it should have been, and they had to improvise. And the fact that everything was just, it was spot on, there was no... You know, you look at his match from all angles. There's no way you can stick a nitpick in to get a fault with it. It was all action. And again, this is a match that I show other people and go, this is brilliant, isn't it? This is all action.
Yep. I think it is a very, very good match. Matthew, number four.
And this is the only hipster match on the list. I'm sorry to say, guys. It is Dragon Kid versus Darkness Dragon in a mask versus mask 2 out of 3 falls match from Toramon/Toramon 2000 Project. Absolutamente, I believe it's pronounced 2002.
Marvellous. So, not familiar with this match at all.
So, 2002 in Toramon is sort of when Toramon started to become what it later became, which is Dragon Gate. So, the Toramon 2000 project was the second class of the Toramon training school coming through. Right. So, people that came through then was Masato Yoshino, Milano Collection, AT.
Sort of the stupidest name in wrestling.
Yeah, Ryo Saito was sort of starting to come up, even though he was in the original class. Naruki Doi. So it's like the hotbed of Toramon. So this actual event, they started feuding the two companies. So they were treated as two companies. So you had Toramon, you had T2P, as it was shortened to Toramon 2000 Project. And at this event, they had two rings. So they had a six-sided ring and a normal ring. Nice. So all the new class from Mexico, you'd win a coin toss and you'd wrestle in the six-sided ring because that was their home advantage or whatever. And then vice versa. So this is sort of a time period where like Crazy Max are feuding with the Italian connection. And it's just a wonderful time period. But the hottest feud at that time was Dragon Kid versus Darkness Dragon. So in line with Tiger Mask versus Black Tiger, you know, that sort of style. So, yeah, this was sort of the reason why this match sticks out for me. And I genuinely had a lot of other Toramon matches, which I was like, ooh, that's technically a better match. Yeah. There's a Yoshino versus Darkness Dragon when he becomes Kunis. And in about 2003, they have an amazing NWA World Welterweight title match, which is phenomenal. But this one stuck out because this was probably the best Dragon Kid we ever had. And one of the best stories, I kind of want to tell you what happens in the match, but I kind of want you to go and watch it. It is sort of knocking around on Daily Motion, but this is just like, this is actually one of the most violent Toramon matches I've ever seen.
Well, that's interesting, because they're not a violent promotion.
Oh, this is full on people bleeding, masks getting ripped, like shenanigan upon shenanigan. It's a combination of loads of storylines that go back to the original, like, early Toramon stuff. It's kind of the final chapter of the faction M2K, which was Mokosuke Kanda and Susumu Yokosuka when he was also Mokosuke. So it was two Mokosukis and one Kanda. Yeah. And it was like sort of their final chapter. And it's just, it's great, man. Like, it's this wonderful mix of like lucha libre and emotion and storytelling, which I just hooked me to Toramon and like just made me care about this weird little promotion that I don't know, and it's kind of dictated in a way my taste in a lot of stuff, or like my, again, like I spoke about it before, my openness to trying new things and in wrestling and
yeah. Going.
Oh,
easy
Tiger. But yeah, I absolutely love it. Like, this was genuinely nearly higher up, but I think my top three stand alone. But yeah, this is such a cool match, and I genuinely think it's like, because it's kind of a similar dynamic to like Ray and Eddie, because it's obviously a mask match involved in it, but it's just so much more, and like it's so interesting to see how much a mask means to a Japanese wrestler. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what I love. Like, is this thing that in Toramon, it wasn't just like, oh, this is a cool little gimmick, so we're different. Like, they bought into that, like, culture and that history of what it meant.
Plus, if you treat something as if it's important, then people will respond to it as if it's important. If you treat it like it means, it's like when Vince Russo did that thing about how championships are just props.
Yeah.
Well, you're right, but if you treat them like they're worthless, they'll become worthless.
The person who loses the mask, and I won't say who it is, they actually cry, and their faction members cry, and it's legitimate as well. Like, they are legitimately crying, and I'm like, whew, that's crazy, you know. It's great, check it out, man.
Right, we've got to the top three. We've still not stepped over anybody.
I think this is where we step.
So Kenta's bad fur day.
That is rotten, but I like it.
That's the hallmark of a good pun. Is that you should hurt but go, oh yeah.
Oh shit. So my number three, I don't think any of my top three should be a surprise to anyone who's listened to Tuesday Night Jewel for any period of time. Number three, Royal Rumble 2000, Madison Square Garden, Triple H versus Cactus Jack Street Fight, which is I think the best match of both those men's careers.
That's a bold statement.
And I they're two people I genuinely like.
Are you going to get Triple H on the other arm for balance?
No.
You can make them kiss.
But that match is unbelievably good. Desperately wanted Mick to win that match. Like, you wouldn't believe. It hurt my feelings massively when he didn't win. Only made me hate Triple H at the time more, which was the entire point of the match. It's absolutely brilliant. I wish they hadn't done the follow-up match the next month.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
He didn't need it. Also, Mick didn't need to appear at WrestleMania that year. Like, no.
There's hindsight's 2020.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Yeah. If it left it there, oh my god. But and you know, there's other Triple H matches. Mick Foley matches I genuinely love. There's other Triple H matches that I've mentioned on this podcast before, in particular his unsanctioned match with Shawn Michaels.
Yes, at right.
SummerSlam. But yeah, I love that match.
So
I love that match.
So
the fingers out.
My number three is Triple H versus Cactus Jack at Royal Rumble 2000. Because
this isn't the same place.
Yeah. It's because, like, I agree. Like,
should
everything.
I leave you two together?
No. Because
he's open to try new things.
Yeah, you've got to wear a mask though.
Yes.
Wow. I do know, we had such a sensible episode, and then bam, there it is. But yeah, I agree with everything you said. Like, but this was because this pay per view is funny because it's like the one that everyone seems to remember because it was on Channel 4 over here, and we all
absolutely and I, on video because I could record it in my own bedroom.
Yeah, and that's the same. This is the first WWE show I ever owned, like my own VHS. I didn't borrow off someone, and I just fell in love with this match. Like the promo package, like the story of it. Do you know, like the do you know what the story kind of reminds me of? It's like a Western.
Yeah,
it is, like it? I don't know if that kind of makes sense. Like no,
it does. It makes sense.
It's as well. It's and Mick talks about this in his book where he talks about the build up for the match. How important it was that Triple H responded to him becoming Cactus Jack.
Yeah,
like it made a difference.
Fucking mind.
We've had and I'm going to take a wild guess. I'm not going to say who and I'm not going to say when, but I have had wrestlers at Future Shock that I brought in respond to something in a way with humor. Rather than taking it seriously, and at that point,
I have given wrestlers direction before by saying basically, I'll give you an example of it. The one time I did it was in Brixton, where I said to Marty Scurll, I said when Jimmy Havoc's music hits and he comes out, you need to react like Triple H reacted to seeing Cactus Jack, yeah. And Marty went, "Got you,
perfect,"
and his reaction is perfect for that reason.
Exactly,
because that is. That is, it should be the be all and don't forget, there's twice that Triple H feuded with Cactus Jack because he's been with him in 1997. Where they had a fantastic street fight at Madison Square Garden, I believe. Where I think it was the first time I'd ever at the time seen someone in WWE being power driven through tables.
Oh, it was crazy.
It was nuts. And the first time he reacts to it in that way of, oh my god, holy shit. And that's before the real legend of Cactus Jack can be built up in WWE audience terms.
Oh yeah.
So this time, by the time 2000 rolls around, it is literally just a case of
That's why I think the promo package is so important, because again, this is someone like me, I didn't know who Cactus Jack was, and then I saw who Cactus Jack was. And another point of this, I think this is probably the peak of JR in WWE. The way he sells this match is phenomenal. And like and Lawler as well, I will give him 100% credit, but it just seems to be everything about this match just seems to be...
Don't forget as well, like 6 months before this, so a year before, Mick was WWE champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6 months before this, Mick was in a mid-card feud with Val Venus.
Yeah.
And hurting and out of shape.
Yeah.
You would not know that to see this. It's only 2 or 3 months before, he was not in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And to get to this level and then be able to do this one last push,
it's also worth remembering as well that the importance of the generation before you to make the generation that follows is that Triple H was still kind of not made
as
a champion at this point, because he'd turned the year before at WrestleMania, he didn't win it at SummerSlam, and there'd been an awful lot of come on, everyone react to this guy. He'd won the belt, he lost the Big Show, he won it back. And this was the time where everyone went, you know what? Without a doubt, this is where you belong.
Yeah.
Mm.
So Triple H would not be where he was going into WrestleMania. He wouldn't have had the credibility going to WrestleMania had he not had those matches leading up to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've done both our number threes. Yep. What's your number three?
My number three is from 2011.
Ooh.
At Money in the Bank, and it is John Cena versus CM Punk.
Which is a ridiculously wonderful match.
It is. And again, it's that when a match comes along, is both brilliant, it was at a time when, quite frankly, it felt like WWE was sort of treading water. They'd just come out of WrestleMania that year, which was, you know, it was, again, no one, if you were to say, do you know what, WrestleMania 27 is my favourite one, you'd probably get backhanded and told to wait outside until you thought properly about your life. Because even with the most rose-tinted glasses, that's when you go, oh, should we just skip this? Because there's nothing on there that's brilliant. There's some stuff that's okay, but overall it just didn't. And that was at the point where we went, well, what's going on? It just feels like treading water. It felt like a chore.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, Punk just hit that switch.
Yeah.
And at that point, we became the hottest thing in wrestling. And the match where you want someone to win.
Doing exactly the same thing he did in Ring of Honor
a few
years before. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
The more, you know, it comes and goes in circles. But you can't buy into it. I mean, a couple of things. First of all, this was proof that the best matches are where you want someone to win and someone to lose. And genuine uncertainty about the outcome.
Mm.
Not knowing. Because, or rather, we all kind of knew Cena was going to win, but we all wanted Punk to.
Yeah.
I think that's something.
Like, when I watched that match live on the TV.
So did I. Yeah.
I think I watched it with Briley, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And when, most people are probably aware, Punk is one of my favourite wrestlers ever. And when Punk won, I genuinely just stared open-mouthed at the television. Up until this point, it's the best atmosphere a mainstream WWE show, I think, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And the just Punk's
sincere.
Entrance.
Sincere. It's sincerity. No one's there going, let's be clever, let's. There's no detachment. There is real investment.
And also, Cena's role in this, which is to come out, try and be a babyface, but have 20,000 people in the Allstate Arena hate him.
Yeah.
Is a step up from what he did at the one night stand ECW shows. You know, where he came out, throws his t-shirt, someone throws his t-shirt back at him. Like, he'd already been through that, and he's amplified what he did there. Because at no point is he a heel. Neither of them are. They're both baby faces. Neither of them act like heels. And there's so many. It's a New Japan match in some places as well, because it's near fall, near fall, near fall, near fall. Super version of finisher.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's a couple of missteps in the match in terms of, because it goes on, it's 30 odd minutes long.
Mm.
And there's a couple of missteps in the match with people just messing up moves a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a proper purist, you'd look at it and go, no, it literally doesn't matter. No. Because that fan, the fans in the crowd at that point would do anything to see Punk win. Anything. And it's the tag match I talked about earlier on in Kikuchi's hometown.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the crowd's like there. And a Japanese crowd like that is not to the level that a crowd in Chicago, which is notoriously loud. Yeah.
For me, the biggest story here as well is it's also about where you are in your life when you see a film, when you see And it was such a, for me, it was a wonderful night. It's one of my favourite nights watching wrestling, because what used to happen is at the Comedy Store in Manchester, the guy who, one of the managers there, was a big wrestling fan. We'd all congregate after the doors had shut. He'd put it on the big screen. We'd order a pizza in. We'd have a few drinks and we'd watch it. And I had my girlfriend at the time with me. I had friends around me.
Mm.
And we watched. The whole show was fantastic. The Money in the Bank matches were fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything. Yeah.
Christian and Randy Orton was fantastic. Yeah. And to have it capped off with that, it's one of those ones where I almost get a little emotional looking back at it and going, you know, you have those moments in your life, you go, this is perfect. And that was one of those moments.
I remember showing my wife this on the network and saying, this is what I want crowds to be like at everything we do ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to get people like that. I mean, we saw, and I'm not going to spoil it in case you aren't on social media at all and you don't know what happened at the end of our show on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Got close.
But that absolutely massive pop is what I live for as a wrestling promoter. Yeah. I want people to either lose their minds and pop for something, or lose their minds and want to riot.
Sincerity.
Like, I don't want.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't want. Oh, that was all right. I want. Holy shit! That's the greatest thing I've ever seen. I'm delighted. Or holy shit! I want to kill that motherfucker.
It's the opposite of both these guys. It's not detachment going well crafted. It's It's feeling. Mm. It's not thinking. Yeah. It's not appreciating. It's living in that moment. And that's why I love that so much.
You got the right word there in terms of sincerity. And that's why I mentioned Trav and Pete before, because there was a sincere feeling of, no, we want this guy to win. Yeah. And that's the same with this match. It's fantastic. It's pro wrestling.
Mm. The most recent 5-star match in WWE from Dave Meltzer.
And
what was the last one before it?
Undertaker Jim versus Duggan. Shawn Michaels.
No, I don't think he gave it. We might touch on this some other point. What was it then?
I think, and someone will correct me, I think the last one before that, bear in mind that's in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The last one before that was in 1997, and was Austin
Hart. Versus Hart.
All right.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's only ever given a couple.
Hashtag Tuesday Night Joe.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Number two
for me, again, will be of no surprise to anyone who listens to this podcast, is from the New Japan G1 Climax 23, day 4, August the 3rd, in Osaka in 2013. Tomohiro Ishii, Katsuyori Shibata, 13 minutes of two dudes kicking the fuck out of each other. It's the match I show people to illustrate why I like wrestling and what I like in wrestling. I must stress, because obviously sad news has befallen us, mm-hmm. with regards to Shibata and looking like he's probably not going to wrestle again. You know, I don't want wrestlers to wrestle that way until they get hurt. And having spoken to William Regal about this, his theory is that it looks stiff as anything, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. Which, and I listen to him because, you know, he's been around wrestling for a long time and doesn't want it to be real. He wants it to be wrestling. So, we were talking about this match the other day when we were in the car together, and I genuinely, I love this match. And they've wrestled each other countless times since, and I've loved those matches as well. I love pretty much anything Ishii or Shibata do, but I read about this getting 5 stars, found it on YouTube before I had New Japan World, and it's no longer on YouTube.
Mm.
Watched it, went back, watched it again. I watched it 3 times in a row the first time I ever watched it, and just went, fuck, that is the best thing. I remember showing it, I think my wife's probably seen it 4 or 5 times, because we'll have friends around and they'll go, if anyone ever says, wrestling's a bit daft though, I'll go, right, fucking sit there. And I'll
put it. It's just when people don't come and visit you anymore.
Yes, it is. It's the best. It's made even better. It's not the G1 final.
No.
It's a group match. It's a group match that essentially means nothing. All it means is both those guys came through together, and the crowd, again, for a Japanese crowd, is super, super hot. And I think neither of them are from Osaka, but I think both of them have got ties to Osaka, which makes it even better. It's brilliant. Brilliant, and right at the point where, you know, a couple of years ago was when New Japan just went, We're going to have at least 4 or 5 5-star matches a year now.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I suppose the only surprise is it's not my number one, because I've banged on about it so much on this podcast.
Yeah.
Christopher, your number two.
My number two. We are going... I love the fact that we're doing the backwards reveals now as well.
Yeah.
We are going back to 2009.
Mm-hmm.
WrestleMania 25. And I think that's all I have to say, really, because everyone will know which match I'm talking about. Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker.
He's all right, isn't
it? Yeah, you know, if you like that kind of thing.
Is it the first or the second one?
It's the first one.
Yeah.
It's the first one.
I prefer the second one.
It's not your moment.
I know, I'm just
saying. Stand down. Share the spotlight, dude.
No, never.
Yeah.
My podcast.
I think you're fine.
No, I'm not doing it again. I did gain one Twitter follower for that, so thank you very much.
Was it him?
It was not, no.
He follows me, I'm just saying. Now, probably because he wants to make sure I'm not stood in his spot at Progress from now on.
Yes, he does.
There we go. Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. The reason I prefer this to the next one, the second one, is because to me it kind of came out of nowhere with no expectations.
That's
in that point. I knew it was going to be a good match. I didn't know it was going to be great.
Mm.
Truly in the sense of great. Plus, again, as a veteran, a lucky veteran of WrestleMania trips, I was 7 rows back on this at ringside. I was at... When I went to buy my ticket for WrestleMania, I went to buy one of the cheapest ones. They'd sold out. Next cheapest had sold out. I went, I'll just... All right, this is a waste of time. I'll start at the other end and work through till I get to the cheap one I can afford. One seat was left at ringside, $750. I typed in my credit card number so fast in case I changed my mind. And then was scared as a 30-something-year-old man to tell my parents what I had done. And I still have that chair. I managed to get signed by Shawn Michaels. It's not good for sitting on, but it looks pretty.
Yeah.
And it's I didn't expect it to be amazing. I expected it to be good. Mm. But to be in that, and I can even feel it now. I can see where it was, the big star over the entranceway, that when Shawn Michaels descended, when The Undertaker came out, when people were losing their minds. And in particular, it comes down to one moment. And again, wrestling is all about moments, which is when Shawn Michaels kicked out of the tombstone. Mm. And I was there on my own, because I'm a winner. I'm not particularly socially apt.
No.
Ept? Is ept a word?
No,
I'm ept. Inept. But I'm not socially ept now, right? But then I was more so in 2009, right? And I didn't talk to anyone around me. I didn't. But when that happened, I was high-fiving and hugging strangers. We were jumping up and down, literally jumping up and down with excitement. And the noise, it wasn't even like you heard it. You felt it. It was in your head, in your chest. And being there amplified that to the point that I will never, ever forget it. To the point that I don't want to watch it. To the point that I think I may have watched it half back, but I don't want to watch it back, because to me it's kind of like almost a perfect experience, and I don't ever want to remember it as anything other than me just going, if suddenly the rapture happened and it turns out the good Lord takes me now, fine, and you know, Shawn Michaels give me a quick told you so by the way past. But yeah, it for me, in terms of big marquee events, in terms of huge matches, it does not get any better than that.
Yeah.
Good call.
That's actually the match that got your housemate into wrestling, you know.
Oh, Stevie.
Yeah. That's she loves Shawn Michaels, and she only loves, well, she doesn't only love, but she only ever saw that Shawn Michaels. She never saw 90s Shawn Michaels, which I love.
What's your number two, mate?
My number two is, I guess, slightly a little bit hipstery, I guess. It is...
We'll be the judge of that.
So this is the one that I was kind of like... I know if you put a gun to my head, I have to choose one. But it's two matches, technically. It is Dean Ambrose versus William Regal from FCW TV 162. And the other match is from 197. Again, like my top two matches are the reason why I'm still in wrestling.
Right.
Top one is, I'll explain when I get to number one, but this one was...
I'm going to let you go straight from this one into your number one.
Okay, cool. All right. So like, this match was like when I was coming back into wrestling. Right. I took a very big sabbatical of probably about 3 years where I just didn't watch wrestling. I actually moved away, moved to the other side of the country, and just buried my head in the sand. So these matches were one eye. Worse. I moved to Reading.
Really?
Yep. I know, mate. Oh, it's a bad time.
You've been affected by living in Reading.
Oh, don't, mate. You will get... your Twitter will be blown up.
Last Friday, no, it's a couple of Fridays ago, Matt... but came with me to a gig, and one of the other acts on was this American woman from Brooklyn who said, anyway, I moved to England and now I live in Reading, and I could just hear Matt just reaching out to her going, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I actually said it to her after the gig. But yeah, so these matches were like when I was starting to get back into wrestling, and again, like I didn't have a clue who Jon Moxley was, and I kind of got, I think I recommended this, and this was when like FCW was on YouTube. Because you couldn't get FCW at the time because there was no network. This was pre, obviously, this was the pre-NXT sort of phase. So, like, I just ended up sort of like, someone would be like, you need to check this, like, Dean Ambrose kid out. Like, he's just incredible. And I just, I love all the build-up to it. Like, the little segment where, and this sounds ridiculous if you haven't seen it, where they're having the psychiatrist come in and do the tests, and Dean Ambrose is the one that's getting analysed. And it's the one where Regal's already in the room, And like, there's this standoff between him and Ambrose, and Regal just looks at him in the face and puts his hands in his pocket and goes, "Good things come to those who wait." And then he pauses, looks at him, and then just starts going, "Fly me to the moon," and just walks off. It's just like, it's fucking brilliant. It's just such incredible storytelling. And then the matches themselves are phenomenal. Like, the first match is this kid who's obsessed about Regal, and like almost this really twisted relationship of like, this is the dad that like, he represents everything that his dad was, and he hates him because he is the physical thing that was his father. And then Regal has this weird connection to him because he is Ambrose, like he was Ambrose, and Regal is full of remorse and all the hideous and horrendous things he's ever done in his life. And then they have this match, and it's this fucking amazing match of just Regal brutalizing Ambrose, doing stuff to Ambrose I have never seen another wrestler do, and it's sick. And he beats him, and you think, fuck, that's it, it's done. It's not. This thing goes on for nearly a year, and it gets embedded in Ambrose's head, and he becomes obsessed, like he has to beat William Regal. He has to beat him. It leads to it, they have this rematch that goes to a no contest, because fucking Ambrose makes Regal bleed from the ear. That, like, he's bleeding from the ear.
I had a conversation with Regal about bleeding from the ear.
Yeah.
This match came up.
Yeah. I love it. Like, the whole second match is about Ambrose just beating the shit out of Regal. So his equilibrium, Regal can't stand, but he doesn't quit. And it's this amazing storyline that kind of was never finished, but was in this brilliant way, in the sense of like, Ambrose went away from this and was just fucking damaged from it. And then, like, if you want to like really really connect things, like, obviously Regal had the feud with Cassizono, but it's almost the match with Cesaro that he has, which is very similar to the match he has with Ambrose, but it's the promo from Regal that like just stuck with me, and that, like, for this Cesaro match, because I understood what he went through with Ambrose, and he's the acceptance of this is his end. And what a brilliant way to go out to the ultimate competitor. And like, this is genuinely why I adore William Regal. This period, it's not 98 Regal, it's not, you know, comedy stuff. And like, don't get me wrong, I loved him and Shajira and stuff like this. But like, no one has ever made me feel that raw emotion and that connection to a storyline like that, because it's just so real, and like, I believed it, even though I know it's not real, if that makes sense. It was just, it's just fucking amazing. I love it.
I'm sold.
So, that's your number two. What's your number one?
My number one is John Cena versus CM Punk from Money in the Bank.
My number one is John Cena versus CM Punk from Money in the Bank.
And in case you're wondering, yes, I was the kid that broke other people's toys.
I don't mind, because we've already spoke about it, but it got, I think I probably watch this match once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And it's everything that I like in wrestling, in that it's there's a story there, there's psychology there, there's still cool moves there, because I don't like it when people go, oh, wrestling is all about psychology and storytelling, and then proceed to do nothing in the ring. Mm-hmm. Because I want to see some athletic competition. It's the match that made me go from being dickhead, smarky fan around Cena's dreadful at everything to going, hang on a minute, Cena's been in probably a dozen of the best matches I will ever see in my life.
Yeah.
Because he's absolutely brilliant, he's obsessed with wrestling, and is a star, and doesn't complain when WWE say to him, by the way, you're losing to the guy who's not even going to appear on television for the next couple of months. Well, it ended up being a month, but everything about this, the feud leading into it, which wasn't, you know, it wasn't a feud between Punk and Cena, really. No. It was a feud between Punk and the rest of the fucking world. and everything leading into it, the reaction at the end of it of just, fuck, the way they dealt with it for two or three weeks after it, of just having him with the belt, taking photos. It was a shame they brought, in hindsight, it was a shame they brought him back only after about a month, but they brought him back with his old Ring of Honor music, and that blew my mind as well. It's just it's the best. And when people knock WWE and say that it doesn't have matches as good as New Japan or the Indies, just show them this.
Yeah.
Because that is a match on the biggest possible stage. And not everyone can wrestle to that ability in front of that many people. Wrestling in front of 700 people at Progress is hard, right? Wrestling in front of 20,000 people in the Allstate Arena and telling that story is fucking virtually impossible.
And you're not just wrestling in front of 700 people who love wrestling and will forgive everything and will watch everything.
Yeah.
You're wrestling in front of people who will either come and see you or see football or hockey or go and watch Avengers. You know, you're in that space, and to be able to include everyone and bring everyone that ride.
So like I have like I said about like this is the reason why I'm still in wrestling, and like it's quite a heavy story, so I apologize, like, because I'm usually the dickhead on this fucking podcast. All right, cool.
No, it's fine.
I'll try my best. But like this, so I was saying, like I quit wrestling like when I was like 20, 21. Like I fucking hated it. Like I just, it like broke me down and like really just made me miserable. And I quit. And that's the reason why I quit being a wrestler, and I quit wanting to be around it, and left. I left Manchester, I left Northwest, and I moved down to Reading and just ran away from it all. And I got a text message from my friend, really good friend, Sam Bailey, who was like, yo, dude, you need to check what this CM Punk guy's doing out, man. He's like, this is fucking amazing. And then sent me the link to Punk doing the whole Hey Colt Cabana. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And like, I actually got like Sky Sports on my Xbox Live, on my 360 at the time, which was probably like fucking 20 quid for a night because it was really expensive. And I just sat there and I watched this match and it just blew my mind. It just completely just took me off guard. I never thought that was going to happen, and it hooked me. But also, like, it reminded me of like why I loved wrestling, and like it really made me sort of miss my friends. And like, oh. A year later, well, maybe a bit less than a year later, we lost, you know, someone that we grew up with in, we grew up with wrestling, our friend Dom Travis, who unfortunately passed away and committed suicide, and, like, it was at that point where, like, I came back and I missed my family, and I wouldn't be here right now doing everything that I'm doing if it wasn't for this match and my friends and you know, I'm a fucking idiot. This is me, but like, you know, like wrestling's everything to me, and this was the start of it. So like, you know, to have an opportunity to just share a little bit with you and like tell you a little bit about it and say how important something, it doesn't have to be wrestling or anything in your life, it just shows that you can have a moment and it just reminds you of just how important something is.
So I said this at the end of our show on Sunday, like I get genuinely emotional at every Progress show, and people think it's an act, and it's not an act. Like I've had, like I properly love wrestling. Like If I didn't have wrestling, I just had comedy, right? My bless her, my wife would have to put up with a hell of a lot more of me being miserable than she currently does. Do you know what I mean? It's my thing I do once every couple of weeks that cheers me up, and I do with my mates, and I see other mates. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm mates with you, Matt, because of wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And for all of us taking the piss out of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm mates with Chris because of wrestling and comedy, but
Wrestling that pushed us over the top, wasn't it?
You know, I'm friends with lots of people in comedy. All my best friends in comedy are people who like wrestling. And I was always an odd kid. I was an odd kid who liked wrestling. Yeah. I wasn't a popular kid. And you know, to now do something really cool, which is be around wrestling, people go, "Oh, you're quite cool." No, I'm not. I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot who's got to do something cool because I've landed on my feet. And but the genuine emotion that, like, John cries at nearly every big thing that we do on progress shows now, because it, between the three of us, you know, it's given us this focus and this different outlook on life. I tweeted a picture of me sat.
Tweeted
a picture of me sat in the ring. And the reason I sat in the ring the other day was partly to do a terrible impression of Aleister Black, and partly because I was worn out. We'd had a show with a big high at the end of it, and my wife and my son had been at the show, and my missus hadn't come to a show for a long time, and it just got to me. And wrestling's a really powerful. I get, now I've told you this before, Matt. I get. One or two emails or direct messages on Twitter every week from people saying thanks for what you guys do because it's made a difference. And wrestling can do that, and sometimes it's just one thing, like this match with you, getting you back into it, and then cool stuff happening with you.
Yeah,
it's brilliant, which makes me like the match even more now, because if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't have moved back up here. We probably wouldn't be mates.
No,
so it's an even more of a reason for that match to be brilliant. And you know, and we appreciate you sharing the story, mate. So
you're all right.
But yeah,
I still fucking hate you though. So
no, you don't. I'll make some toast afterwards. But this is, you know, because we are good mates and we do talk to each other and it's, but it's, I had no idea that match meant that much to you, and it's, you know, it's amazing though.
You can never underestimate the impact a moment can have on someone's life, and it could be something as simple as a little act of kindness, you know, from one moment that just makes you go, you know what, if that's okay, then everything can be okay. Yeah. Everything can be better, and for all the silliness of pro wrestling and the fact that at heart it's a ridiculous thing, it gives everyone, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, 2-3 hours to just shut out everything else and go, you know what, this makes me feel happy, this makes me feel excited, it gives me an outlet to jump up and down and shout and yell. And it's also means the world because, you know, without sort of going too much into what I've been doing, with the whole mental health awareness month, we've all had our own adventures with the head fuckery of chemicals, highs and lows, and life experiences. And sometimes all it takes is a couple of nice moments to go, you know what, it's not bad if that can happen. And having these memories and having these moments can mean the world. And yeah, it's not why we do it. It's not why you get out of bed and do it, but it's kind of nice when it does. It means the world.
I totally agree with you. And it's, like, I certainly know that when I was a teenager, which is before I was diagnosed with the various forms of depression and anxiety that I suffer from and I'm very public about, like, wrestling was the thing I locked myself in my room and did.
Yeah.
When I quit drinking, one of the things I did, there's two things I loved when I was a teenager, apart from drinking and drugs, but when I decided at 20 to, which was in 1998, which was when I got back into wrestling again, and it's no coincidence, it's because I, instead of going out and being stupid, I would stay at home and I would play video games and I'd watch wrestling. And they're things that I still do now. The thing I do to unwind, I'm currently having sleep therapy at the minute to help me sleep, and I've actually had a sleep therapist say to me, what do you do to relax? And I've gone, I don't, like, I'm too busy. She said, but you must do something when you're at home. Like, a lot of people said, you have a glass of wine? Or, I don't drink. She went, oh, what are you doing? I went, well, I watch wrestling, and watching wrestling doesn't feel like a job. I don't watch stand up comedy.
No,
it's my job. Wrestling still doesn't feel like my job, even though it kind of is my job now.
Yeah.
You know, I do this. I religiously try and put this podcast out every week, and I spend most of my time thinking about wrestling and writing wrestling. But wrestling isn't a job. Wrestling's still my hobby, and I still love it. And I can sit and watch WWE Network or New Japan World or whatever, or Blu-rays or DVDs or whatever, and it cheers me up. I can sit and play a video game for a couple of hours, it cheers me up. You know, they're things that I still do now that have copied over from what I did when I was a teenager. And there was a brief period when I was, maybe when I first quit drinking, when I thought I might be a wrestler, right? And I wanted to go to America and I wanted to train, because I didn't think you could train in this country. So I wanted to go to America and I wanted to train to be a wrestler. And the things that used to make me feel invincible, I was talking to James Drake about this, there's little things that used to make me feel invincible, and one thing was music. and watching certain music videos always made me go, ooh, but then watching wrestling was that felt like that next step and something that was achievable. And I always think it's wrestling has much more power to bring people together than people realise. I had three or four different people come to me and say, I've been on a really hard time recently, I really needed this show on Sunday. And I don't think as promoters we can ever lose sight of how important that is. Because, yes, we do make money out of the shows.
And of course,
you know, and it is a business and it's a successful business. But at the core of it, it is still, I want to send people away thinking, I want to come and do that again.
It was born out of love. It was, I want to do this because it'll be great. And then that continues. And if the difference between the companies that are born out of passion and the ones that are born, shall we say, somewhat more cynically, is that the ones that are born out of passion endure.
Yeah.
And the ones that are born out of cynicism do not.
Yes.
Because people know.
Yeah.
And you've got to be, A, mental, to the point of obsessive to the point of mental to get past the early days.
Yeah.
And two, you have, that love has to show through your product, through what you're creating. Because if it doesn't, people see the gaps. They just see, and it isn't just the people watching, it's the people doing it. If you're, there are guys who work for Progress, guys who work for Future Shock, who do it because they want that to be a place where, because it means something to them, because they love it, because they have good memories there, because they get to be themselves and express themselves and do the, commit their art to the canvas of the world in a way that you don't get elsewhere, and that again, that comes back to that. It's how long have we gone without some sort of knob joke? Because I'm starting to feel
I am worried
that we're being really serious now.
I mean,
I threw in a toast reference, but
it was
more out of fear.
You've also got like some gluten-free bread you showed us. So I mean, that is almost quite a nice gesture.
I'll make you a little bit of gluten-free toast, mate.
But during Matt, I mean, obviously, Matt, listening to you talking about that, your emotional connection to that match, and it tells me about where you were and what you went through. And one thing stuck in my head throughout all of that, when you were genuinely feeling overwhelmed by emotion, I have to follow this cunt.
because we're done now, and you're the...
Yeah, you know what? Oh, here's a match I really liked. Well, fuck you.
I'm so sorry.
And your...
We'll edit it. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not editing it out. Listen, I'm going to enhance it. Christopher, what's your number one?
Okay, my number one is also...
John Cena.
Twice. It's also Jay Lethal's favourite match.
Is it? Oh, I think I know what it is.
Oh, no, yeah. I don't know what that noise was.
It sounded like a racist. Street Fighter sound effect. Yeah. Great.
Hadouken! Hedo Kenta Kobashi. Now,
what? Oh, my head.
Oh, what?
Come on. Your number one.
My number one, it is 1992.
Right.
WrestleMania 8. Bret Hitman Hart versus Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Nice.
That is my favourite match of all time.
Is it a good match?
It's a great match.
It is. It's, and this is someone who, you know, it didn't come near my list, but I still appreciate the match.
Yeah.
I appreciate the finish of the match in particular is wonderful. That's the one where they were told not to bleed and they bled, right?
Oh, it was an accident. Yeah. yeah. Here's the situation, right? So let's, and again, it comes back to where you were and how you were. So 1992, I was, what, 15 going on 16? Probably 15. I was just about to turn 16 at this point. And rudderless. Didn't know what about anything. Didn't know what I was doing in life.
Wasn't roddyless, though, was he?
And we're back.
Yeah, and we're back. Dickheads that we were before. Before we revealed we all actually liked each other. Sorry, guys. Back to normal.
Kayfabe, you bellends. Now, I just sort of found pro wrestling. So I started to watch bits and pieces. This was the first time I'd watched like a full show.
Sure.
And I mentioned this, I think, on the podcast before, recorded off Sky Movies on VHS.
Nice.
With the ad breaks. On a tape that I watched and watched till it was probably worn thin. But for me, Roddy Piper and Bret Hart was like the start of an an era of me, because one of the first things my mate Steve, hello Steve, if you're listening. Steve Roster, good man. Because, again, I didn't have loads of friends who liked wrestling at school. It was me, it was Steve, that was it, really. Mm. And a couple of others who dabbled a bit. But that was the point where he said, on one of the first tapes I saw, he said, oh, this is Bret Hart, you'll like him, he's Canadian too. Because that's how it works, yes, apparently. Yes.
Technically Roddy Piper also.
Well, obviously, but yeah. No, stop it. Winnipeg, just out of Glasgow. And this was the one where I hadn't watched the matches, but I'd followed the results. I was a little bit disappointed that the Mountie had lost the belt to Roddy, because I liked the Mountie.
That's a great sentence.
You know, I was really gutted. I thought, great, the Mountie. He's going to do... I like the Mountie.
Surely he'll be Valiant.
Yeah.
Hang on. Handsome, where's this brave, company based?
Handsome, brave and strong, as it turns out. So it led to this... It was weird, because it was face-face.
Mm.
And this was 1992, and this didn't ever happen back then. It was all very clearly good and bad. But there was a reason. This was Bret Hart lost the title, never got his rematch. So they were going to have... And this is without me knowing the backstory. And watching the promo beforehand and seeing Roddy Piper. Now, Steve was a big Roddy Piper fan, and I was a big Bret Hart fan. So we had that... Even though we didn't watch it at the same time, we had that little divide, right? Mm. And it was... This is something that will come back. I'll come back to it a little bit later. But the match itself, to me, was brilliant because it was the brawler versus the technician. It was a clash of styles. It's like the Will Ospreay Matt Riddle match, was one of my favourites from last year, because it's two different styles. And it was...
Also goes with that first strike thing that you were talking about earlier on. Because I'm still saying Matt Riddle when you hear neon face.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. So he's... So it was basically, they start, and Rod's the veteran. He was belittling him in the promo beforehand. I didn't know at the time that all that stuff was true. That it was genuinely true that Roddy Piper was taking him by the hearts, that he was in Canada, that he had this history of them going back years and years and years and years. I also didn't appreciate that Roddy Piper was one of the most hated men in wrestling until only like a couple of years previously. And Bret Hart was on the third. He'd just become a singles guy. And he was still kind of scrabbling a little bit. I didn't know that Roddy Piper hadn't ever lost in WWE. So if I knew all that, I'd go, well, Bret's fucked, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, so Bret was very much the underdog. And the match starts, and Bret Hart was better than Roddy. Mm. That's the story. He out-wrestled him. He absolutely wrestled him in circles. Didn't do loads, but he out-wrestled him. And the point where he counters the hammerlock by running Roddy out the ring, and Rod comes back in and spits on him, and then just goes, okay, calm down, because it's like the old Roddy's coming out. Anyone who's been watching views is going, oh, fuck, shit's getting real. And then, first time I've ever seen blood in a wrestling match. And really? Then, yeah, I just, it blew my mind. I mean, and then all the stuff where Rod just went, right, I'm just going to beat the shit out of him. And the bell, the ring bell, the moment where the ref went down, Roddy grabbed the ring bell, and again, sincerity, connection, no detachment. You could hear people. Nowadays, if anyone goes into the ring with a weapon, if you take a chainsaw in the ring, there'll be people around going, kill him! Chainsaw him! Right?
Kill him.
You know? People were going, people were begging him, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Please don't use it. Bobby Heenan's going, do it, kill him. You know the old saying, what the hell, use a bell. You know? And he went, okay. And I knew in my head at that time, in my limited, if he hits him with that bell, he's going to become a bad guy.
Mm.
He's turning, he's becoming a bad guy at this point. And he just went, threw the bell aside, put the sleeper on. Because of his compassion, then that led to the finish, the roll-up, he lost the match.
Mm.
And there was that moment afterwards where, all right, raise his hand.
Yeah.
And that, people will forget how important that was in making Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Much like Cactus Jack did with Triple H.
Yeah.
And as someone who was new to pro wrestling, that was amazing. That was one of the, that's still, I'll probably watch, should we say, better matches?
Mm.
In the sense of more moves, like you said, or a louder crowd. And because it was 92, it was kind of during the, let's not mention steroids, era of pro wrestling. And so it wasn't at the hottest, But for me, that's the one where I kind of went from being quite let's to, I'm obsessed to the point I'll be talking about this with two dickheads in 25 years in a house in Wales.
Yeah. No. Just to add in my colleagues' top three. John Briley's, well, his top three in no particular order, was Punk Cena, Money in the Bank, 2011.
Correct. Did he cry?
I don't know. Kota Ibushi, Shinsuke Nakamura from Wrestle Kingdom 9.
All right, yeah, cool.
And TLC from WrestleMania
Good man.
7.
Good man.
Mm-hmm. Glenn's are...
Reverse Battle Royal.
No.
It's your moment, Glenn.
He initially put Punk Cena Money in the Bank, but then changed his mind and said Punk versus Austin Aries Death by Dishonor 3. Austin versus Brett WrestleMania 13 and Goldberg versus Hogan from Nitro when Goldberg wins the title.
Nice. Oh. Yeah.
So which illustrates the three of us are very different in our outlooks on wrestling, but equally not a million miles apart.
No.
So it's good that I want you to do your lists just because I genuinely don't forget the rules. The rules are no wrestler can be in the list twice. You can't use two matches from the same show, although this has given you the scope of pretty much the entire history of wrestling. If you choose two matches off the same show, you need professional help. But write them in your notepad on your phone, or write them down longhand and then take a photo of it and tweet me the picture. It's easier than trying to get them all in a tweet. At Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Joy.
Be prepared for it to be harder than you think right now.
Yeah. It's hard. It's not the easiest. But no, do that because I genuinely like to know where you're all at with yours, and see if there's any proper left of centre number ones.
Do you know what? I'd also be interested to hear if there's people who have a story about how a match is more to them than just the match itself.
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, I think that's a very cool thing to talk about. So if that is also the case, where there's a match that is. It's a great match, but it means way more to you than just the half an hour in the ring and the promos leading up to it.
If someone out there, if your life was saved by the Doomsday Cage match with Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage.
It wasn't. But yeah, again, at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. A couple of little plugs to wrap things up. Matthew, where are you on Twitter?
I am M. Richards, host, and this week I'll be listening to The Cure, Boys Don't Cry. So, tweet out.
For God's sake, stop being daft.
I am
you,
at
Christopher?
The Brooker Man.
Yes.
And this week I'll be mostly listening to my insides try to digest the Chinese food from last night.
Nice. I'm at Jim Smallman. JimSmallman.com. /TNJ to point people at this website, at this podcast rather. Do please, rate and review it and recommend it to people, and more listeners it gets, the cooler. I am genuinely going to have merchandise within the month for you to buy.
Oh, are we going to talk percentages and shit?
I reckon so.
One of them is just a picture of Matt Richards being hit with a loaf of bread, drawn in a manga style.
Amazing.
It's not.
So you know when Martina comes out, you get glow sticks. Can we hand out bread sticks?
Yes, 1,000%. So I'm going to be doing that. And again, don't forget noon tomorrow. So by the time this goes up, in about 12 hours' time, we're making a bit of an announcement about our show in September. So check that out via this_is_progress on Twitter or progresswrestling.com or any of our other social media channels. Obviously, support the Distraction Pieces Network because it's great, and all the various podcasts on that. We're all going to bugger off now and make some gluten-free toast. That's what we're going to do. Say goodbye, boys.
Bye-bye.
Do I have to have toast?
You can have just gluten-free bread.
Oh.
Non-toasted. You've got to eat some of it before you leave.
Oh, it's on the goodbye, time. Everyone.
Goodbye, everybody.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.